Hey there, boys and girls. I'm going to add this in here a little bit here. So, we've been a little inconsistent. And I know that this has been a problem the past couple of months. And, well, I just want to straight up say it here. We're not gone. We're not dead. We're not buried. This seems to happen to us from time to time. We've got episode 90 in the can. So this one should be out probably the week after 89 is coming out. And this one's coming out on Saturday. So expect 90 around the same time. Brent's starting a new job. So he's got to rework his schedule and when he's going to be available to record and stuff like that. We're going to have to rework our recording time as well because he was exhausted when we recorded episode 90. I'm working 5 days a week also, so I don't have those 2 days that I used to have where I'd be able to, you know, edit the show during the week. And, you know, with catching up on television and stuff like that, I really, you know, just need to unwind some days and, you know, pretty much editing has been like the last thing on my mind, I'll admit that. So that's kind of why this thing has been as late as it is. But we're going to try and get out at least 2 episodes a month. We're going to hope for 3 and maybe even 4. We'll see how it goes. But we got a review corner coming after this, and we got a bunch of other things coming also. So stay tuned. Comic Timing ain't dead, we promise. Just hang in there, really. That's all I can say. We love you.
Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 89 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinson, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. One away from 90, so what do? We explain comic books for everybody. Seriously, everybody. John Mayo, Adam Murdo, Chris Johnson, and Ian Levinstein give you a how-to into the world of comics. A lot of fun, a lot of good times. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 89 of Comic Timing. And we are one away from the big 9-0 here at Comic Timing. And what better way to celebrate than to have yet another episode without Brent? So, you know, everybody will be... your ears won't be bleeding nearly as much this time. I kid. All right. It's actually sort of an old school episode here because we've got some returning guests and one person who's never been on the show before. Let me introduce the new guest first. You might know him very well from Comic Geek Speak and his own venture, which is beginning now, as well as the star of his own comic book. That's right. It's the Murd. Hey, Adam.
Hey.
So what is your job description these days? I mean, do you fight bad guys or do you still work at the store? Which one do you prefer?
I'm just a retailing boy at heart.
All right. Fine.
Just pushing the Christmas decorations. That's what I do.
Your secret life is safe with me. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
We're also joined this episode by a returning guest who hasn't been on Comic Timing in quite some time, actually. John Mayo from Comic Book Page Podcast. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
No, doing okay.
Hanging in there, definitely. And also joined this episode by yet another returning guest who hasn't been here in a little bit since that mini episode we put out a little while ago. Chris Johnson from the Amazing Spider-Cast and also from the Comic Book Page, his own little crisis thing he's been working on lately. What's going on, Chris?
Not much.
Working on somebody else's feed so you don't have to work on yours?
Well, I have to admit that the Amazing Spider-Cast is pretty much deceased.
Aww.
At this point, I'm sorry to say.
Aww.
See, sorry now, to hear that.
Now I'm shedding a tear. What are we going to do, man? What are we going to do?
Well, I'm working on, actually, a new Rising from the Ashes. I'm working on a new podcast that I hope to get up and running in a couple of weeks, and I'm still explaining the inner workings of Final Crisis over at Comic Book Page with my friend Juan.
Yeah, those are some good episodes. I appreciate you doing those.
And Juan actually got in touch with me earlier today, and it looks like, yeah, I will be indeed at San Diego Comic-Con this year, so I'll get to chill with everybody this year.
Cool.
Oh, awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just actually confirmed my flight back earlier tonight, so all set, got my hotel room, got both my flights, and good to go on the press pass. So, yeah, it's official. I'm at San Diego, man.
Cool. Awesome. I'll be there, too. Chris, are you going to be there?
I doubt it. I think
how about
that,
you, Adam?
No, I've pretty much determined I'm not doing any fly-to cons this year. San Diego is a big commitment of money and time, you know. I think it's going to be an every other year thing.
Right. I can see that. And San Diego's not only a fly-to, but fly-in, you know, get commuter from one side to the other of the hall. It's too big.
Well, I'm actually seriously considering not even going to the con on Saturday, because just to avoid the crowds and just do something else in San Diego, because it might just be better off that way.
You may be right.
Yeah. Although we are coming in early so we can go to the zoo on Tuesday, so that should be fun.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that is fun. Yeah, the CGS guys did that last time, and it was a ball.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. And what would an episode of Comic Timing be without some sponsorship? That's right, we are indeed sponsored, as usual, by Heroes Corner over at heroescorner.com. The month of May for Heroes Corner is Blackest Night Crazy. Everything with Blackest Night is discounted hella this month. We got Green Lantern Corps discounted for 40% off. We got Green Lantern number 43 and 44 discounted at 40% off. Blackest Night Tales of the Corps number 3 is discounted. Blackest Night Tales of the Corps number 2 and number 1, duh. And obviously, Blackest Night number 1, 75% off on Heroes Corner only for $1. So get yourself all of your Blackest Night tie-ins for really, really cheap. Plus, taking a look over here, they've even got new Green Lantern shirts with the extended symbol on them. That seems to be the new thing of the Geoff Johns run, where they have that, you know, green circle on top of the regular emblem. And those are going for $13.46 on Heroes Corner. So not just comics discounted, they've also got t-shirts discounted. How about that? The picks of the month this month for Heroes Corner are as follows. New Avengers number 55 is our pick for Marvel. As surprisingly enough, Brent and I have yet to pick a new Avengers title. And, well, about damn time, right? Written by Brian Michael Bendis, pencils and cover by Stuart Immonen. It's the return of the Ultimate Spider-Man team to Marvel Comics. And this one is going to be a bunch of fun, as it looks like it's going to start off a brand new story here. One of the Hood's gang has found a way to power drain the new Avengers. So, yeah, the Avengers sort of need their powers, last we checked. This one is going to be a discounted 50% off. So it's only going to be $2, regular price of $3.99. Justice League, Cry for Justice, number 1. This one is by James Robinson with art and cover by Mauro Cascioli. And not only is this one a new start for the Justice League, originally this was going to be an ongoing, but it's been cut down to a miniseries. So it's only going to be 6 issues, so this is number 1 of 6. But this is also going to be a way for Brent and I to tell the difference between James Robinson writing for Marvel and James Robinson writing for DC. As previously, we picked his Captain America one-shot for Marvel. So it's going to be interesting to take a look at this. And James Robinson, obviously, from Starman and Superman. Mauro Cascioli was the artist on Trials of Shazam for a while there. So for the back end of Trials of Shazam, for that matter. And his art is pretty damn pretty, I must say. 50% off here at Heroes Corner. Once again, $2, regular price of $3.99. And last but not least, you want to talk about crazy? This is freaking crazy. Deathclock versus the Goon, coming out of Dark Horse Comics. Written by Eric Powell, art by Eric Powell. Brennan Small is the co-writer on it as well. John Schnepp does the cover. Dave Stewart does an alternate cover. We've got tons of insanity coming out of this issue here. Anybody who's a big fan of Adult Swim's Death Clock, anybody who's a big fan of The Goon will want to check this issue out. This one's 75% off on Heroes Corner, only 88 cents, regular price of $3.50. So you're saving a bunch this month. And as usual, if you want to come over to Heroes Corner for the first time this month, use the promo code CTROCKS, that's CTROCKS, to get an additional 5% off on your first order with HeroesCorner.com. Best damn customer service around, as usual, HeroesCorner.com. Well, this episode is going to be a little bit of a primer when it comes to comic books, so hopefully everybody who's listening to this will be able to learn at least a little bit of something. This was actually brought up by a listener to the show who had just started listening, just started getting back into comic books a little while ago, and let me read his original comment on the episode 87 thread first from the Comic Timing website. Hey guys, I wanted to let you know that I just started to get into listening to podcasts and blogging after receiving an MP3 player for my birthday, which led me back to comics. I haven't read very many comics because I've never been in a place where I was exposed to them. So I'm a late bloomer, but come to find out that I've missed out on a lot. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts on comics, trying to find a great one to get. You guys are by far the best. Thank you for that. I just listened to episode 87. I've learned a lot, and you guys make me laugh my butt off. Being new to comics, I was wondering if you could do a show on comic book terminology, or sometimes explain terms as you go. I'm sure there are a lot of people that might come across your show who are rookies like me. For example, it took me a while in the show to get what you guys were talking about with Diamond and previews. Also, could you settle for me the definition of graphic novels? I've seen so many definitions that I don't get it. I also love that you guys don't freak out about how long the show is. The longer, the better, I say. Thanks, guys. And, well, thank you very much for that. And I guess you should listen to Raging Bullets if you really, really want long episodes. But we're going to try our best to keep things a little bit less, I guess, lengthwise than the past couple episodes have been. But, hey, what are we going to do here? So, yeah, we're doing a primer here. And I think the best thing to throw out there, let's start at the beginning of our comic book careers, our career collecting comics, that is. And let's start off with Adam. I know that this is a question that is usually asked on your show when you're talking to creators and stuff, but How did you first get into comics?
Okay, well, my sometime co-host on CGS, Matt, actually dragged me into it. Because we're the same age, we've known each other for many years. He wanted a friend who reads comics, and so he... sort of being the bad influence he is, got me into it, and he let me borrow some of the comics that he had, and eventually talked me into collecting a few things myself. So we went to our local comic shop, or LCS. Now this, we're doing a primer. There's a little vocabulary lesson right there. LCS equals local comic shop, and I collected the Infinity War crossover back in 1991. Mm-hmm. And a little lost lamb in the woods that I was, I actually asked the shop owner, are these going to be worth anything one day? And she looked me straight in the eye, straight-faced, and said to me, only if you buy all the crossovers.
Oh, boy.
Yep. off to a good start.
I did, too.
I bought every single crossover of the Infinity War. I don't regret it, because some of them were actually pretty good reads, and it got me hooked into the Marvel Universe right from the get-go. But, yeah, that's how I got started. Just that crossover and the bad influence of a friend.
And from I guess it's a good thing you didn't get into it during Civil War.
At the tender age of 12, I don't know how I would have taken that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, that and there were a lot more crossovers to collect for Civil War than there were for Infinity Gauntlet and Crisis and all those other crazy things. But, yeah.
Yes, good point.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, how long did it take you to get into DC?
I pretty much steered clear of DC, not because I was against DC or wasn't interested in it, just because I didn't think I could afford, in either time or money, to invest in learning about more than one comic company or universe at a time. Mm-hmm. So I stuck to Marvel for 3 years, and then the Zero Hour event came in 94, and that was designed, or so the marketing claimed, to as a good starting point for new DC readers.
Right.
So they had that zero month with the number zero issues for all the titles in the DC line.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just took that as my opportunity to jump into DC and haven't looked back since.
It's funny, you and I sort of share a little bit of a DC history, because that's right around when I got into it. I think it might have actually been Zero Hour Zero that I picked up first.
Huh.
And then from spiraling.
Well, it did, but it was designed to do, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Age gap, but yeah, around the same time for that for me as well. Let's roll over to John. John, how'd you first get into comics?
One thing, I've got the last year's Overstreet, and I know we'll get to what Overstreet is later, but
right.
You know, I was looking up Infinity War, and it was $250 cover price. Adam, I think you did well. It's still worth $250 for every issue. No loss in value. That's better than the stock market these days.
Wow.
True that.
So you can sell it on eBay for $250. Yeah. Don't you?
I started reading back in the late 70s, the tail end of the 70s, and I got hooked at 7-Elevens, the spinner rack at the grocery store, that sort of thing. It took me a few years, you know, when I was just starting to get into comics before I discovered the local comic book store. And then, of course, things went, you know, nuts from there. I was mainly getting DC stuff originally. All-Star Squadron, New Teen Titans, Legion of Superheroes, Justice League, stuff like that. And it was John Byrne's work on Alpha Flight and Fantastic Four that really started to get me into Marvel. Then they did the Secret War crossover. And, you know, I too got all of the crossover stories, and that's when I started pretty much getting most of the Marvel Universe as well.
Okay, so yet another person who got sucked in by crossovers.
Yeah.
Which today, as previously stated, can be a pretty penny.
Hey, the only reason it was cheaper back then is comics were cheaper back then.
Right.
But we're still bumping up the number of things you were getting substantially.
Sure, yeah. How much did comics cost back then?
Back then, they were like 35 cents going up to 40, thereabouts.
Oh, boy.
I know. I miss those days.
I wish I was there for some of those days, man, because I think when I first started back in the 90s, I think the cheapest a comic would ever get was 99 cents. And that was really only for the Fantastic Four Unleashed and stuff like that, all the Marvel stuff that was coming out at the time, where they were doing those special, they called them throwbacks because of you know, the price. But really, they were totally new stories. They just were side stories. You know, they had nothing to do with what was currently going on with comics. But I remember that was the only time I was ever able to get something below a dollar when it came to comics.
I think I can vaguely remember in the very beginning of the 90s, there were still some 75-cent books to be had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like humor books primarily.
Well, so in other words, not the big two. Yet again, terminology-wise, Marvel and DC would be the big two.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Okay, cool. And Chris?
I have a kind of a long and sporadic history with comic books. I got started in the 90s. I think probably the big reason I got into comics was because of all the cartoons that premiered during the 90s. You had, you know, the Spider-Man animated series, you had Batman the animated series, you had the Marvel Action Hour with Iron Man and Fantastic Four, and then on Cartoon Network they were showing repeats of, you know, the Super Friends. And so I think that's where I really got interested in superheroes. And I still remember the first comic I remember reading was Spider-Man number 16, which was Todd McFarlane's last issue. Then from there, I'd hop around. Spider-Man, Crickley, Spider-Man and Batman were my top two favorite heroes, and I would get I collected a number of the issues in the Maximum Carnage crossover, and that's where my fondness for Mark Bagley's artwork comes from reading those 90s issues of Amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'd also get the Batman Adventures comic book that was published during that time that was emulating the 90s animated series. I got a number of those, and including some early trade paperbacks of, I think, at least the first trade paperback collection from there. And I also got a couple of other random comics. I'd get a Green Lantern here, a Green Arrow there. And I didn't really collect comics. I just kind of, when I the opportunity presented itself that I could pick one up at 7-Eleven or another gas station on a trip, I would get it. I picked up a random issue of Heroes Return Iron Man and Fantastic Four and Spider-Man during the reboot. But I really didn't get into collecting comics until X-Men 2, X-Men United, when I picked up the X-Men The Ultimate Guide, and I flipped to an entry which had Nightcrawler and Colossus, who I knew, well, it was Nightcrawler, I should say, because Colossus wasn't around then, but I remember seeing this team of mutants, including Nightcrawler and Kitty Pryde, and three others I didn't know who it was, and I thought, wow, these guys look pretty cool. And that was Excalibur.
Oh, okay.
And I went to a comic shop, I think it was Gladiators Comics, and I picked up, I think, the first 10 issues of Excalibur, including the Sword is Drawn one-shot that kicked the whole thing off. And that really jump-started me back into comics. I kind of collected as many Excalibur issues as I could find from the comic shops around town. And then it wasn't until Spider-Man 2, because even though I was sporadically getting comics here and there, I was always a big Spider-Man fan, you know, all the time. He's still my number one favorite superhero. Mm-hmm. And when Spider-Man 2 came out, I went into Barnes & Noble, and they were selling those $12.95 Masterworks that Marvel had sold through Barnes & Noble. And I picked that up along with Essential Spider-Man number 6.
Okay.
And those two, along with just all the comic book related movies that were coming out, just reignited my interest in comic books, you know, full force. And that's really where I started collecting them rather than just picking them up here and there.
So really, it took you a while to actually really get into the comic book shop. The way you're describing it, that you got most of your stuff from spinner racks and from Barnes & Noble and stuff like that originally.
Yeah, and every now and then I would go into a comic book store, but it wasn't really a weekly trip or anything like that. It was just here and there, you know, here and there I'd go to a comic shop, here and there I would go to a gas station. And it wasn't until, you know, when all the comic book movies started coming out and it was, you know, seeing these heroes finally realized on the big screen that I really started to just really go full force into comic book collecting rather than just, you know, getting something from the library here and there.
Okay, cool. Now, before we go into back issues and stuff like that, I'm curious to see how much the comic shop has changed throughout the years for you guys, because one of the things that, that you know, some people might be, I guess, maybe somewhat afraid of sometimes is the stigmas that might be associated with the comic shops and whether or not you guys have actually really experienced that throughout the years. I mean, obviously, we know John's been on this show before talking about comic shops and everything, but we'll get the quick, I guess, primer guide to that as well. What should people expect when they're heading into the comic shop, either for the first time or, you know, maybe for a second viewing, something like that? Basically, what should they do or not do when they go to the comic shop, John?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say the first thing you want to do when you're going to a comic shop is kind of know what you're looking for. And by that, I don't mean what title or what issue, but at least what kind of story you're going there to buy. Do you want an action adventure? Do you want a drama? Do you want a slice of life? Do you want something based on a TV or movie or a video game or whatever? And really, you know, each comic store is unique. And when you go in there, you know, talk to the person behind the counter and stuff. Some people behind the counter will be very receptive to that. Others, maybe not so much. But, you know, again, that's going to vary from store to store.
Sure.
But if you're new into comics and trying to find something to read, the best thing to do is ask the people who are running the store there, what do they suggest? What do they like? And if you can go, you know, I like these TV shows, I read these kinds of books, I like these types of stories, or I like these comic book characters, they ought to be able to give you some good advice.
If it's a good store, they will be friendly and kind and help you out. And really, I mean, that's the way you get people into something new. I mean, obviously, if you just turn them away, how are they going to want to come back?
Right.
You know, and that's what you're hoping for. Also, one of the things that they might want to do, John, is perhaps, and again, you know, this is all up to, I guess, really how open and friendly you think you are. If you see somebody at the store that looks like, okay, and you know, I hate to put it this way, that they're not the stereotypical, you know, comic nerd who doesn't actually want to have contact with the outside world. If they look like someone who is friendly and, you know, might be browsing or something like that, you might even want to go up to them and ask them what's good right now.
Going to the stereotypical comment for a moment, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about there, but it'd be like at a grocery store, you're in the fruit and vegetable area, and you go up to some random person and say, hey, can you recommend which tomato I should buy? 50-50, they're going to say yes and help you, or they're just going to say, go away, you're bothering me, I'm going to rush, you know, whatever. So, I mean, the comic store is really no different in that respect. You're going to have the gamut of people. A lot of the people you're going to find at the comic book store are reasonably well-educated, reasonably nice people, and there are going to be some that may be a little socially deficient in some manner. That's okay.
Yeah. Sometimes you can tell by the store as well, whether it's, you know, one of the brightly lit stores is actually, you know, playing music or something, or whether it's a dark, damp dungeon.
Exactly. And you want to find a store you're comfortable with.
Right. Definitely. Obviously, some people don't have those choices, but, you know, if you do have those options, go for it. Adam, what's your take on it?
Well, I'm sort of going around in my head here. Let me ask what you guys think. Do you think it's a good idea to suggest that people visit their local shop on a Wednesday first? Because on the one hand, there'll be a greater range of new product there on the shelves, but on the other hand, it also tends to be the busiest day of the week for the staff, and they may not be free to pay as much attention to new customers as they otherwise might. So what do you think?
I would suggest against it, actually, because for somebody just getting into comics, I really don't think they need to have the stuff that came out the absolute latest, unless they're looking for, you know, like the Obama Spider-Man issue the day it comes out.
Yep.
You know, with that as the exception, you know, a slow day at a comic store may be the better way to go, just to where they can spend a little more time talking to the person there and getting recommendations and stuff.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely either a Thursday or a Friday might be a good way, because that way there are still plenty of books on the shelf because it's only a couple days after, you know, the rush happened. It might not be a good idea to come on a Monday when, you know, everything from the previous week is sold out. But if you hit it up on a Thursday or a Friday, you should be perfectly fine. And there should still be plenty of stuff on the shelf. Chris,
well, it also depends on the store, though, because, I mean, normally when I go to stores these days, since I get most of my stuff mail order, I go on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the end of the sales cycle, but the stores around here usually still have quite a bit on the shelf. That's if you go on a Tuesday and the stores are barren, and it's not because they're clearing out space for the stuff that's coming the next day, mm-hmm. that tells you something about the store.
Valid point. Yeah, definitely. Well, Adam, I mean, what would your opinion be on it? I mean, would you shy away from Wednesday as well?
I don't know that I would, actually. Hard to say, but I think I would want to go on Wednesday when all the new comics have arrived, just to be able to see the place at the peak of its productivity, you know, when all the produce, as it were, is ripe on the branches.
Well, I have something that, you know, you might not want to, on your first trip to the comic shop, you might not want to go on a Wednesday, but I think it might be a good idea to go, you know, after you've had a little bit of experience with the shop, because if you go on Wednesday, then you might be able to interact with some of the patrons of the store who are there to socialize and talk comics, and that would, you know, get you further entrenched into the community.
Excellent point. I agree with that.
You know, and see, it depends on whether you're willing to do a third or a fourth or a fifth, you know, visit to a store. But obviously, if you're interested in the media, you're probably not just going to take one trip and then say, that's it, I'm done, you know?
If right. you're not willing to make multiple trips, though, I don't think you should go on a Wednesday.
Yes.
Because on a Wednesday, you're most likely to have parking issues, the store's going to be a lot more crowded, mm-hmm. and that may turn a lot of people off. You know, and if somebody wants to go in and just kind of casually browse the store, that's easier to do on a slower day.
Certainly, yeah. Adam, I mean, you guys in you know, in Pennsylvania, you have the luxury of having, you know, one of the nicest stores I've ever been to, with Golden Eagle, and I would certainly say, I mean, if you go up to anybody in the store who works there, and they're going to be nice enough to actually give you some recommendations and stuff like that. So really, it just depends on the store as well, whether you're going to find somebody who is willing to tell you something or not. So remember that, people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On behalf of the Golden Eagle people, I thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome. Hey, come on, what can I say? I mean, and this is also coming from a guy that in New York, there are tons of comic shops. And I mean tons. And I could probably write up a list of which ones to go to and ask questions and which ones to avoid. But most of the people listening to the show aren't going to have those sort of options. You know, they probably only have one, if any, you know, maybe, if they're lucky, maybe two or three in their local area. If they live in a city, maybe they'll have more than that. But, you know, in their area that they could really go to. So it really is a crapshoot whether or not they're going to find a nice, friendly store with accessible people who will be able to help you out and be courteous, or whether or not they're going to find a store that, as I described previously, is like a dark, damp dungeon, and if you're not a regular who comes in on Wednesday, then you're not going to know what the hell's going on. But I think those sort of stores are dying out, especially in this economy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope those are the minority.
One would hope, yes, definitely. But yeah, going back to the original question, Adam, I mean, are there any tips other than, you know, for example, what day to go on? Are there any other tips you would give to someone who's going into a comic shop?
Set aside enough time to explore the store thoroughly and get a good sense of everything that they have to offer. I mean, not just comics, so new comics, but back issues, trade paperbacks, and perhaps even gaming supplies and action figures if you're into that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the back issue bins, I would encourage people to flip through there and use that as an opportunity to get a sense of the history of the medium, if you will.
Well, I'm glad you bring up back issues, actually, because what would you consider a starting point to be for a new fan? I mean, should they go towards the back issues immediately, or should they try to pick up something off the shelf?
Well, I would say go to the shelf first, but I'm not suggesting they should start buying back issues right away, especially because that can be an expensive proposition. But to at least take a look at them to get a sense of what has come before in the hobby.
Just so they know exactly what there is to get into.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
I'd almost split the difference there and suggest heading to the trade paperback section. Because that way, if you're willing to pay for a full trade, if you just want to sample some stuff, certainly the new issues is the way to go. But with the trade paperback, you'll get a complete story, you know, in one shot. So that's something to think about.
For most trades, because, you know, sometimes you will.
Fair enough.
Because sometimes, and actually, this is the distinction I'll make. Look for a volume one. You know, because if you pick up a trade randomly and it's actually got a number on it and it says, you know, like, let's say you pick up Fables, you know, if you're going to start Fables on the most recent volume as opposed to starting at volume one, you're probably going to be confused as to what's going on. You know?
Yeah, so, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so definitely try and shoot for that. Now, and again, we'll talk more about the guides and stuff like that, but... Let's explain previews a little bit to people, and of course I've got, you know, one of the right people on the call to actually be talking about that. Although actually before I get into that, Chris, did I ask you the last question? Sorry, we went on so many different roads there. I forget whether I actually touched on you or not.
No, I just have a couple of things to add.
Go ahead.
I don't want this to come off of negative, but I would almost advise not getting trade paperbacks at the comic shop. Yeah, and this isn't. I'm sure we're going to get into the whole online services and everything later on in the conversation. But with trade paper, because looking through the Marvel previews, I can tell that they're definitely seeming to stepping up some of their prices, and their prices are getting kind of erratic between different volumes. And I think that really, if you want to get trade paperbacks, I really think that you are better off getting them online. For a discount because they're getting more expensive, you know, with, I don't know if it's partially because of the economy or whether or not it's part of Marvel's, you know, increasing several things to $3.99, but trade paperbacks are seeming to see the price rise that we're seeing in single issues right now. And I think that you'd get more for your money if you went somewhere online and made a trade order than if you picked something up full price from the comic shop.
That's a good point.
It is definitely. But the thing is, though, with people who are first starting out, and, you know, obviously, you know, if you are just literally just first starting out, I doubt you're listening to this podcast, but people who are just really, really beginning, they might not even know that a site like that's going to exist, you know?
That's why we're here.
Exactly. So what you're saying is just completely avoid the comic shop when you're first starting out? Is that what you're saying, or...?
Well... That's not what I mean. I'm trying to just, since you're trying to get into comics, I think that if you're going to get into comics, I want somebody getting into comics to be able to, you know, I think that we'll probably get into some books that we want to suggest to beginners. And I want people to be able to get the most for them to sample with their money.
Valid point.
As possible.
Okay. Yeah. And even a place like Amazon might be a good place to do that.
Yeah, Amazon's good too.
Right. You know, just anywhere that you can get what you're looking for at the price that you're willing to pay. And I think that's probably a valid point to make. And, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, we are going to get into the whole online aspect at least a little bit, because if we start talking about it too much, then I think we'll probably sway a little bit too far into that. But let's go into titles that we would recommend. And after that, I think we'll go a little more into the terminology of the books that you might be finding on the shelf. But yeah, in fact, why not? We'll start with you, Chris. Some titles that you would recommend to the beginner.
Are we talking currently, or are we talking about just titles that we think that throughout, you know, the history of comics would be good for beginners?
Well, you know what? Completely up to you in this aspect, because you know, whether or not you think that there's something on the shelf right now that a beginner might like, or whether there's something, you know, in trade or whatever that someone should pick up, hey, go for it.
Okay, well, I would probably, just because it's on my mind right now, top of my list would probably be Grant Morrison's JLA.
Mm-hmm.
Because I recently got the first hardcover that DC put out, and reading that first issue tells you everything you need to know about every member in that team. And it's not like big explanations or everything. It's just little things in the artwork and characteristics of, you know, the big seven that are on the JLA. And it's just a really great introduction to the Justice League at that time and these characters. And it's not anything really deep or complicated. It's just good superhero action. And I think it would definitely be something that would, you know, be good for a new reader to pick up and could get into really easily.
Yeah, you don't need a dictionary and a textbook like you do for some of the Grant Morrison works.
True, very true.
Yeah, no, that's just straight up superhero action right there. I would fully agree with that. I mean, that's actually what got me into the Justice League myself, like when I was first getting into comics. Because I you know, obviously this was back then, but you know, when I saw JLA number one, I'm like, okay, wow, it's a number one issue of all this with all these heroes that I'm well familiar with. You know, even if Superman has a mullet, I know who it is. I went up and I picked it up, and that's basically what hooked me into the Justice League, you know, growing up as a kid. And I think other people will have that ability to do the exact same thing, because it's just straight up superhero action. That's what's great about it. And let's head over to Adam.
Well, you know, as of a little while ago, I might have suggested John Byrne's Superman the Man of Steel, since it is a retelling of Superman's origin, and it's a good ground floor place for someone to get into one of the most iconic characters in comics history. But, of course, things being in the DC universe as they are right now, if somebody read that and then said, oh, this is cool, let me go read some of the Superman comics on the shelves right now, they'd be a little bit confused.
Oh, yeah.
Because very different Superman appearing in the comics on the shelf right now. So, I may have to veer off in a different direction. I mean, you know, Chris mentioned that those Excalibur issues by Chris Claremont and Alan Davis, and that I concur with him. I mean, that was an important part of his comics collecting history. It was an important part of mine, too. I mean, fresh off of getting started with the Infinity War, that was the first series I started collecting on a monthly basis. Infinity War may have gotten me into comics, but Excalibur kept me in comics. Mm-hmm. It's very beautifully drawn. There are a few illustrators in comics these days that can compare to Alan Davis. And just Chris Claremont, for that title, used a very sort of a lighthearted, humorous approach that I think is appealing to just about anybody. Plus, it's got the prerequisite superhero action, too. And I might also recommend Bone. I mean, it's in its own universe, it's self-contained, not a whole lot of continuity to master, and it's appealing to readers of all ages. And I'm trying to think of other things, but it's having a hard time thinking of something that's going to be catchy for someone who's never read comics before.
Well, if anything pops up along the conversation, you can obviously go ahead and bring it up. That's fine.
Okay.
So, some of the ones that I would go for, and I'm not going to say Watchmen, because... And I know that you know, it's still fresh in everybody's mind, everything with the movie and all that. But I wouldn't give Watchmen to someone who really wants to get into comic books. I would give Watchmen to someone who's already read a couple of comic books and understands the medium a little bit. Because if you read Watchmen just straight up, right off the bat, even if you've seen the movie, it might still be like a little jarring. And better yet, you might read Watchmen and then just say, okay, I've read Watchmen, and not want to actually get into the medium of comics. And I think that's one of the problems we're currently having with this whole Watchmen phenomenon is, yeah, sure, people are reading Watchmen, but are they really going to read anything else? I mean, I think DC's doing a decent job of their whole, you know, after Watchmen, what's next campaign that they've been doing, but still, you got to be in a comic shop to actually, you know, get that going, if you know what I mean. So I'm not going to say Watchmen. What I am going to say, however, and you know, it might be a little, you know, I can't even say this that it's, you know, dated at this point, but I'm going to say Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 1, because that is a clean, solid Spider-Man story. And even though the Ultimate Universe has very much changed since that first volume came out, it's still just light, fun Spider-Man. You know, and anybody who knows the character of Spider-Man will probably walk in there and immediately understand that this is Peter Parker, this is Spider-Man, this is a comic, I'm going to either enjoy it or not. And that's why I would definitely go with that. Another recommendation I'd make is Fables, because, again, Fables is the type of thing that you could just really get into. Start with Volume 1, and even if you've never read a comic before, if you're familiar with any of the Fables that your mother might have read to you when you were a kid, it might even be for you. So I guess those are the two recommendations I'll make off the top of my head, and yet again, if something comes to me, I'll certainly say it. John?
Really, for me, that's a tough question to answer, because whenever I try to answer for somebody, I try to keep in mind of again, what do they like to read, what are they interested in, and why do they like those things?
Sure.
So, you know, what would I recommend to somebody? Well, if they're into, like, zombie films or something, I'd suggest Walking Dead. If they like the Buffy TV show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8. Too long of a title.
Gesundheit.
You know, it's a great series. It's really good. If you want, you know, classic Spider-Man type stuff, Amazing Spider-Man right now is really good. Mm-hmm. You know, Fables, I think, is an excellent pick. If you like Golden Age superheroes and stuff, the Justice Society is really good. You know, Captain America is really good. Geoff Johns is doing some great stuff on Green Lantern. You know, Echo by Terry Moore is a different kind of a story. You know, it's really good. It really comes down to what types of stories do you like, why do you like them, and then finding a comic book that fits that definition.
Yeah, because really, I mean, you need to know the person as well. Because mm-hmm. because if you don't, then, you know, you can go tell them to read Bone, and if they're into, you know, gory, gutsy zombie stuff, they're going to be like, okay, this was kiddie, whatever, and then move on. But I would fully agree, though, if you're trying to get a kid into comics, Bone is certainly the way to go. Because
PS 238 would be another one that would be good for kids and
agreed.
Stuff, and
agreed.
I think for adults, too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No question. Yeah, definitely. And actually, since we're bringing up Bone and stuff like that, independent comics, the current state of independent comics we discussed on the show, you know, actually in the episode that this comment was previously made on, but independent comics can be a little more difficult to find on the shelf, and yet a lot of them might actually be better to recommend to someone than a DC or a Marvel, where you've got that entire history to deal with. So what... Do you actually agree with that statement, that an independent comic might be the way to go over a DC or a Marvel if someone's first trying to get their feet in the door for comics? And I'm throwing this out there to anybody who wants to answer. So go ahead and shoot it out there.
Well, let's start by defining what an independent comic would be, and really that comes down to right. anything that's not Marvel and DC.
You got it.
It's the equivalent of a TV show not being on ABC, CBS, or NBC. You know, an mm-hmm. off-network type thing.
Right.
I think there's a lot of validity to recommending an independent title, because most of those tend to be more standalone, self-contained things. Mm-hmm. It's like when you watch Lost on TV, if you've been watching Lost, you've got everything you need to understand that narrative. It's not like you would have to go catch, you know, some episode of Heroes or... CSI or some other show to figure out what's going on. With Marvel and DC, they do crossovers, and what happens in one book can sometimes seriously impact another. So the self-contained aspect of independent titles is, I think, a point in their favor. Something that makes them a little more challenging to get is not all stores carry all of these independent books. Mm-hmm. So depending how obscure they are or are not, they can be a lot harder to find.
Valid, yeah. And that brings also the aspect, and we'll get more into this in maybe another question or two, but unless you actually know how to work, you know, the Diamond previews, you might not be able to find an independent comic to your liking.
Well, I think it comes down to, you know, how are you finding out about new titles? Listening to podcasts is a great way. Surfing the internet's a great way. Talking to friends is a great way. It's all going to be essentially a word of mouth campaign. You're probably going to know about the independent title when you go looking for it.
Okay, cool. Adam, how much of a gateway drug do you feel what's hip and cool for kids right now, like stuff like manga and stuff like that? I mean, how much crossover do you think there's going to be between manga and the American comic book in the current world. I know that you might not be the biggest, you know, manga reader in the world, but obviously you know the current state of comics right now, and that manga is always on top of the list when it comes to you know, collected editions and stuff like that that have been coming out. So, and even New York Times bestsellers. So how much of an influence do you feel that might be into getting someone into American comics?
I don't see there being very much crossover, honestly. I mean, they're similar in that they're both fusions of pictures and words to tell a story, but the subject matter and the storytelling style tends to be very broadly divergent. And I don't see their kids that are interested in manga necessarily crossing the aisle to the superhero comics. And I look at the displays in bookstores and I see that the manga is slowly but surely eating up all the space that used to be given over to traditional American trade paperbacks and graphic novels. And I don't think that the twain meet very much. So, and shortly, I don't see any particular reason why there should be a crossover between the two. I don't think there will be.
All right, so you think that there's two separate fan bases?
Well, that's not to say that somebody can't read and enjoy both, but I don't think there's any real reason to think that somebody who reads and enjoys manga will necessarily naturally gravitate to American comics as well.
Okay. Although one book that I would recommend to someone who does like manga, and if you really do want to try and get them into, you know, an American comic book, because I've actually seen this be a success story to some friends of mine where I've had this exact same situation going, and that's Runaways. I feel that that's probably the closest thing story-wise and even art-wise that you can get to an American manga that might be easily accessible at a shop or a Barnes & Noble or something like that, because, again, those digest-sized Runaways are all over the place, and you can easily, you know, get them to someone who might first be trying to do the connection. That's really, it's Runaways or nothing in my head when it comes to the crossover. Or maybe even a Scott Pilgrim. It needs to be something that's, I guess, close enough to a Japanese manga where someone might not even realize that it's not Japanese.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely agree on the Scott Pilgrim there. It's got that big-eyed style.
Certainly, yeah. Anybody else have an opinion on that, Chris?
Well, I don't know if there would be much crossover with the superhero stuff, because, I mean, superhero comics do dominate the medium right now. I mean, that's pretty much how it is. Most of the top 300 is, you know, superheroes and stuff like that. But independent-wise, I kind of see a bit of a similarity between independence and manga, to be honest, because with manga, I mean, there's so much different books you have going out. You have the romance comics, you have books like Monster and Death Note, you know, Full Metal Alchemist, you have samurai books like Rurouni Kenshin. You have all these different stories that are just available for people to be able to read of various different genres and different, you know, stories all together. I think it's kind of like independent comics and Vertigo in a way, not in exactly in format and in art-wise or anything like that, but the fact that both of those seem to have all these different stories that aren't connected, that seem to be self-contained, that are from various different genres that you can pick up.
Yeah, so it's the sort of thing where there are so many different varieties of manga out there that you might find that there's enough crossover between that and the independent world, I guess.
Yeah, the variety is what I'm thinking of. I know I'm kind of rambling right there, but when we were talking about it, it just popped into my head because, you know, you can, I don't know if there's like, I'm trying to think of a good example and nothing's coming to my head.
Okay, you mentioned Monster, and Monster might be something great where, you know, you can then recommend something like maybe a Ed Brubaker's Criminal or something like that. You know, something where, you know, if someone's in, you know, interested in the whole intrigue of a crime book or something like that, it might be along the same lines.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. And also, when we were talking about things that people might want to pick up when they're first getting into comics, I was going to mention the Vertigo first cut type books where they're $5 trades that have one number one issues of like six different Vertigo titles, and I think those would be great for. And the Vertigo line, for people who don't know, is kind of telling more. They're like mature readers' titles that are telling a whole bunch of different stories. There's not much crossover between any of them. They're just telling their own stories. And those first cut trades, I think, would be something good for somebody that would be interested in what Vertigo has to offer, because you can read the first issues of the series, and if something grabs you, then, and you know, Vertigo, I think, would be a great thing for somebody who's not exactly interested in superhero comics to get into, because they have those $9, those $10 trades that you can, you know, if you're reading one of these first cut trades and you read this number one issue and you're like, oh, this sounds really cool, then you can pick up a really cheap $10 trade and the, you know, first story arc. And if you still like it, then you can continue on with this self-contained story.
Right. And that's another thing that I would recommend with the, you know, after Watchmen, what's next things as well. I mean, they're $1 issues of some of DC's best work that might very well do the exact same thing as that Vertigo, you know, first look thing that you were just mentioning. Perhaps get someone into it enough where they will start picking up the trades of these old series.
Right.
Speaking of trades, since we've been saying trade, one of the questions that came up was, what is a graphic novel and what is a trade paperback? So I'm going to put this question out there. Give me your definition of a graphic novel, and are graphic novels trade paperbacks in your mind, or are they two separate animals? And Adam, we'll start with you.
In my mind, they are most definitely not one and the same thing.
Okay.
And while we're on the subject, one way I've heard the term graphic novel used is just as a high-sounding synonym for comic book, you know, just a lofty euphemism for what is considered a lowbrow entertainment medium intended to make it sound fancier.
It's a graphic novel, yes.
Indeed. Yes.
The Death of Superman DVD, based on the best-selling graphic novel. No, it's not. Based on a friggin' comic book.
Yeah, please.
All right. Yeah, so, yeah, in my mind, the definition of a graphic novel versus a trade paperback. A trade paperback is very simply a collected volume that binds together and publishes as a single volume a story that was originally told, serialized as individual issues of a monthly comic book. Mm-hmm. Whereas a graphic novel is a single self-contained story that was in that was never serialized as different chapters. It was published originally as one long story. It's longer format, longer than a serialized monthly comic, and it tells a complete story all in one volume. That's what a graphic novel is to me.
Okay. All right. So in your definition, Watchmen would fall into that category of a graphic novel then, even though it was individual issues originally, all 12 issues of the maxi series, which is, you know, basically it's longer than a miniseries, just so people can know, are all collected in that one trade.
That would be a trade paperback. I wouldn't call that a graphic novel.
All right, okay. So basically you're just looking at more stuff like, for instance, Brian Azzarello's Joker graphic novel that came out recently?
Yes. If it was originally published all as a single volume, if it was never serialized, then it can call itself a graphic novel.
All right, I got you there. Okay, because some people do broaden the definition to include stories that are completely told within that. Like again, for instance, a miniseries or a maxi-series or whatever that were six issues, 12 issues, the point remains they're all included within that one volume.
Yep. And then that is, people may be justified in thinking of it that way. It's just, I just don't, that's all.
All right, okay. And John, do you differ?
No, by and large, I completely agree. I mean, the one thing to realize is these are not ironclad definitions. Different people are going to use the terms differently. But I agree with Adam. If it was done originally as various issues of a comic book or intended to be done that way, so I'll split hairs a little, that's a trade paperback. If it's something that is one story and one installment, kind of like a regular novel, if you were, you know, a prose story, that's a graphic novel. Watchmen's a trade paperback. Wanted is a trade paperback. These are not graphic novels, but marketing speak, like Adam was saying, they're using it as a highfalutin word for comic book story.
Now, would you recommend someone wait until a miniseries is traded to actually read it, because you know, with a six-issue thing, something like that, and this is someone that's obviously already started reading comics, that's what I'm aiming towards here with this question, but would you recommend them wait until it's entirely collected to read it, just so that they don't have to worry about remembering to pick up every issue of a miniseries until it's out?
If they're not looking to go to the store every week or every couple of weeks or whatever, certainly I would recommend waiting for the collected edition. And really, you know, you look at some of the storylines going on these days, it can be really frustrating to read them as they're serialized. Mm-hmm. Old Man Logan in Wolverine right now is a prime example of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's had so many delays that they're taking the final installment of it, kicking it out to a one-shot so they can use the Wolverine title itself to tell other stories. Mm-hmm. Even worse, the second-to-last chapter, and this is an 8-issue story arc, the second-to-last chapter is coming out in issue 72. Mm-hmm. However, what they're going to do, because of the whole Wolverine movie, they're going to publish issue 73 on, I think, May 13th. Mm-hmm. The next week, they're publishing issue 72. The following week, they're publishing issue 74.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
And if you're waiting for just the Old Man Logan part, you've still got to wait for that last part. So, I mean, for somebody who just wants to read a story versus somebody who wants to be reading multiple comics and likes the serialized aspect, you know, it comes down to, would you rather wait for the DVD set or do you like watching the TV shows every week? You know, whichever suits you best. But there's a lot to be said for waiting for the collected edition these days.
Especially if it's a certain creator. And Mark Miller would be one of them because he's a hot name right now because of the Kick-Ass movie that's going to be coming out. And yet, you look at Kick-Ass, and Kick-Ass is up to, what, issue 6 in the singles right now?
Yep.
Well, look at War Heroes that he's doing. 2 issues of the 6 have come out, and it's been, I think, 4 months.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, we'll be lucky if at least Kick-Ass Volume 1 is out by the time that the movie hits theaters. Because the movie's not too far from now.
And this is something that I think people new to comics or getting back into comics need to understand. It's not like television shows where every week you're going to get a new episode of Lost or Heroes or whatever. Every month, you'll probably get a new issue of a monthly comic book, but there may be delays. You know, so you just have to kind of roll with that and understand it's going to happen.
See, now I'm just thinking of what would happen if it tell. Well, and actually, the best way to describe this is, I mean, remember how happy Joss Whedon fans were when they aired Firefly Out of Order? Well, that's how Wolverine fans are going to feel this next month.
Yeah.
crap. All right, Chris, your turn. Give us your definition.
I'm actually pretty much in line with Adam and John that I think that, you know, like they said, graphic novel is basically apparently the term that marketing decides would be better sounding than saying comic book. I guess graphic novel is more dignified.
It's the filet mignon, the comic book's burger.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm also agree that if it was originally in single issues, then you'd call it a trade paperback or hardcover. And if it was a graphic novel, its original content that was not previously published in single-issue form, say, like a graphic novel would be Arkham Asylum, Serious House on Serious Earth, and then a trade paperback would be Volume 1 of Batman Hush.
Okay. All right. And I'm glad you brought up hardcovers, because that's another comment I wanted to make, that don't be afraid of picking up hardcovers. I mean, sure, they might be a little more money than what you're willing to spend on a trade paperback. However, that's the way the current model is. A hardcover will come out usually, and I say usually because sometimes it says there's exceptions, but usually a hardcover will be out, and then maybe 3 or 4 months down the line, they'll release the trade paperback. With the hardcover, you're again, I'm going to say usually here because sometimes it's not the case, we'll get content that was not included in the original, you know, single issues or whatever, but then a lot of the times that extra content isn't actually included in the trade, which comes out 3 months down the line after the hardcover. So it really depends on how long you're willing to wait for a story if you're getting into comic books, whether or not you should pick up that hardcover or the trade. And I might have been even more confusing than the actual concept of hardcovers versus trades right there in that explanation. but that's sort of the way things are right now. I mean, I'm not too happy about it myself, but hey, that's the way a lot of things are going right now in comic books, Marvel especially, where I think, and John, back me up on this, Winter Soldier, that came out in hardcover, and then about 2-3 months later came out in trade, correct?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I would ask Chris Marshall that, to be honest.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Most of what I get is in the monthly format. So, I mean, I've got the data in my computer for all this, but unless I'm looking at it at the time, I got no clue.
That's fine. All right. But it's a little disconcerting, though, that the hardcovers are coming out before the trade in many aspects.
Well, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. It really depends which way the publisher thinks they're going to make more money. There are a lot of cases where they'll do the trade first, and then they'll come with a premium hardcover or whatever later, and then sometimes they'll do an even fancier, you know, omnibus hardcover or whatever after that.
Like Vertigo. Just now they're doing the deluxe editions of Y and Fables when they were doing trade paperbacks from the start.
Right, right. So damned if you do, damned if you don't, right?
And I just wanted to just toss this out in case it's hardcovers can be graphic novels too. Graphic novels can be softcover or hardcover.
Yes.
Just wanted to add that in there because it might have come off like we were saying trades and hardcovers were in the same line. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got to say I was quite surprised when I was looking at the most recent Marvel previews because I think that price is another big aspect if you want to get the hardcover of the trade, because I was looking at Marvel previews and I think the latest Amazing Spider-Man hardcover is $30 for a hardcover of Amazing Spider-Man, which is something that just like hardcover, a $30 hardcover, you'd think that this is a big, you know, huge miniseries like Final Crisis is a $30 hardcover and the JLA hardcovers are $30 hardcovers that are like 256 pages, these huge, you know, oversized hardcovers. And then you have from an ongoing comic, you know, a $30 hardcover. That just kind of floored me when I saw that when I flipped to that Marvel previews.
Yeah, that's definitely something that if I was picking up in trade, I'd be waiting as long as it takes to get the trade.
Right.
Well, and that's actually something to suggest to people who just want to kind of sample at low cost. Look for things on discount racks. Look at the 50-cent bin and stuff like that, because comics are not cheap these days.
Oh, yeah.
No.
You know, we're moving from the $2.99 price tag to $3.99 for a lot of things, and, you know, just figure out what you want to budget for comics.
Like, I mean, especially in this economy, I mean, I'm looking at the amount of money that I'm spending on comics, and I've had to cut a couple of titles that I was enjoying, just not enough to continue buying if I wanted to keep at my price point, because, you know, I only have so much money to spend. I might love this, you know, this medium, but if every book is going to be $3.99 out there, I'm going to be spending probably the same amount of money on half the amount of comics.
Yeah, same here. I've been dropping a number of things for the same budgetary type constraints.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get away from the press mo a little bit and head back to the something that might be maybe ease people's minds a little bit. And this is probably Adam's wheelhouse. So let's go there. I'm gonna talk about a little bit here events in comics that people really should be familiar with if they're first getting into comics now. We'll start with DC first, and then we'll roll over to some of the most recent Marvel stuff. And Adam, I'm gonna ask you this. What is a crisis in the DC universe, and what is the difference between pre- and post-crisis when it comes to the original crisis, Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Okay. Crisis stories in the DC universe are stories that alter the established history of various characters in the DC universe, the fictional world in which all DC comics take place. Mm-hmm. Practice of telling crisis stories and changing the history of the characters and their world has been going on since 1985, which was the 50th anniversary of DC Comics, when certain powers that be at DC, for various reasons, decided that after 50 years of publication, they needed to streamline their publishing line. They needed to simplify the history of certain of the characters, most notably Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. They're usually the ones who are at the center of crisis stories when they happen, those big three characters. And they also wanted to change the geography of the DC Universe as well to make it a little easier to understand. It used to be that the DC Universe actually consisted of several different universes, several different versions of the planet Earth, different alternate realities, each of which had their own set of superhero characters, and DC editorial thought that this might be a little confusing or imposing to potential new readers, you know, appropriately enough to the topic that we're discussing right now. And whether they were correct about that or not is open to debate, of course, but for one reason or another, they decided they were going to streamline the history of various DC characters, trim down the world, the universe that they all inhabited, and they came up with this big, sprawling 12-issue series that would give a story-based explanation for these changes that they were going to make, and that became Crisis on Infinite Earths. And since that time, it's become sort of a mini tradition at DC at DC Comics to periodically tell these crisis stories in order to change the DC universe around to fit whatever agendas they happen to have at that time, to recalibrate the characters and their histories or the worlds they inhabit to suit their current needs. And it seems to happen on the whole roughly every 10 years or so. And after DC did Crisis on Infinite Earths in 85, then in 94 they did Zero Hour, Crisis in Time, and then in 2006 they did Infinite Crisis, and then a couple years after that they did Final Crisis, which is kind of an anomaly.
And Identity Crisis would be an anomaly as well.
Yeah, well, it didn't do exactly the same thing as the other Crisis stories did, but it didn't change reality in the sense of going back in time and changing history, which is what most of the other Crisis stories did, but it did at least reorganize the way the characters in the DC Universe related to one another. It did change the position of the DC Universe chessboard, for lack of a better term. Identity Crisis was a crisis in that it changed the dynamic of the way things stood in the DC Universe. But it just didn't literally alter time and space, which is what most crisis stories tend to do.
Sure, yeah. And with Identity Crisis, with Infinite Crisis, they sort of reset things in certain aspects to what it previously was, as in Crisis on Infinite Earths got rid of the multiverse, and then Infinite Crisis, in a way, brought it back, even though the main stories of the DC Universe are still happening on one Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it's technically not the same multiverse that we have now, either. But so you could think of Infinite Crisis as like an equal and opposite reaction to Crisis on Infinite Earths. Like you said, it undid a lot of the things that Crisis on Infinite Earths accomplished. But it still didn't bring the DC Universe back to the way it was prior to 1985, prior to Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Okay.
So when people say pre-crisis and post-crisis, they're really talking about 1985 as the dividing line. Mm-hmm. They're talking about the way that the DC Comics reality, the world that the characters inhabit, was before 1985, when DC did this big revisionist project, and then post-crisis refers to how things were after 1985.
Right.
And pre-crisis, there were multiple different universes, multiple different versions of the planet Earth, each with its own set of characters that lived there, and occasionally the inhabitants of the different Earths would cross over with one another. And so pre-crisis included basically every DC Comics story, with the exception of certain imaginary stories, quote-unquote, which is something that deserves to be explained in and of itself, that was published between the 30s and the 80s. And post-crisis, most of those, well, I won't say most, but quite a few of those stories published between the 30s and 1985 were rendered invalid, and the histories of quite a few DC characters were started over from scratch.
Now, imaginary stories, I guess, would be the closest thing to, I guess, what-ifs in Marvel Universe?
Right.
Okay, all right. Oops. Talking about geography a little bit, where the hell is Metropolis, and where the hell is Gotham City? Because I've seen it so many different ways, even over the last couple of years, and I have no idea where each city is.
It's one of those things that sort of revises itself as time passes. Mm-hmm. it's one of those things that that tends to change depending on the needs of particular stories or the desires of particular creators. Somewhere or other, I have a copy of something called the Atlas of the DC Universe. Uh-huh. Peter Rios of Comic Geek Speak fame actually gave it to me as a Christmas present once upon a time.
Oh, cool.
And I believe in there it it suggests that Metropolis actually exists in Delaware.
Ooh.
And which isn't where I would have pictured it. And Gotham City, I think, is supposed to be in New Jersey. But,
which would explain a lot.
Well, they're both basically clones or Jungian shadows, if you will, of New York City.
Yeah.
I mean, Metropolis is supposed to represent the bright and shiny, upscale part of New York, the aspect of New York's personality. And Gotham is supposed to be the dark, seedy, crime-ridden part.
Yeah, Gotham's the SN, like New Jersey. Yes, I'm sorry. I had to make a New Jersey reference. Come on, I'm from New York. What can I say? All right. Anybody have anything to add on the whole pre-crisis thing, or did Adam do a good enough job?
Adam did a great job on that.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's...
Okay, that's good.
Yay. 2 points. 2 points to you. So let's talk Marvel a little bit. And there have been a couple of things that happened recently in the Marvel Universe that I guess are probably important to what's currently going on. And I'd say that's probably Civil War, Secret Invasion, and the most recent of which would be the whole... Norman Osborn taking over thing that's been going on. Yeah, let's try and explain this and have people's heads not fall off. Civil War, John?
Civil War, basic pitch is they had a Superhero Registration Act figuring these people are essentially lethal weapons. We register guns, we should register heroes, make sure they get trained. You had some people on the one side that were for it, such as Iron Man and Reed Richards and stuff. Some people on the other hand, such as Captain America, that were against it, they fought. You know, that's the high level view of it.
And at the end of Civil War, and again, you know, this is a bit of a spoiler here. So if you don't actually want to hear what happens at the end of Civil War, then please fast forward about 5 minutes. But at the end of Civil War, we do lose Captain America, which was sort of important to the whole. I guess Marvel Universe as a whole, because for a while there they went into a state of mourning, and it split the Avengers down the middle even farther than they were at the end of Civil War proper. That's sort of important as well, because right now, if you were to pick up a Captain America comic right now, you would not be reading the adventures of Steve Rogers, you'd be reading the adventures of someone else.
To me, that's not really part of Civil War, that's something that happened immediately thereafter.
Gotcha. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I was about good to say point. That didn't happen in my copy of Civil War number 7.
Oh, but it should have.
Exactly.
That's why Civil War issue 7.5 was basically that issue of Captain America that happened.
Pretty much.
It. Yeah. All right, Smarty Pants, you want to explain Secret Invasion?
Well, I only read the first 4 issues, so you might want to take this one.
All right, I'll do it. Well, Secret Invasion was basically everything about the Marvel Universe goes into question when it's revealed that a bunch of people within the Marvel Universe were in actuality Skrull sleeper agents. This included Hank Pym, who is Giant Man, and a bunch of other code names over the years. He was actually a Skrull. Jarvis, the Avengers butler, turns out to be a Skrull, and pretty much you cannot trust anybody. And this gets worsened even further when a ship comes down and a bunch of people say they are the original versions of a bunch of previous Avengers, and that's what drives everybody batso nutso, basically. It's a giant Skrull invasion that has to be fought off without the help of Tony Stark, who had been numero uno in the Marvel Universe up until now, because none of his tech is actually working. And by the time that's over and done with, we're left with Norman Osborn at the head of everything, which then leads into current Marvel Universe with what's happening in Dark Reign.
It's worth pointing out Skrulls are alien shapeshifters.
Yes.
So okay.
They're basically I guess the best way to describe them, they're sort of the Cylons of the Marvel Universe, at least as they were explained in Secret Invasion.
as in they were sleepers. They had no idea. Some of them had no idea that they were even sleepers. They all thought that they were human, when in actuality they were shape-shifting aliens. That's the closest I guess I can get to that. Does someone actually want to pick up Dark Reign here? Because again, that's current Marvel U. If anybody doesn't want to, I'll cover it.
It's basically the inmates are running the asylum. Norman Osborn, who had been the Green Goblin, a major Spider-Man villain, takes the killing shot, taking out the Skrull Queen. So he's basically seen as the savior of the planet, and is able to kind of take over Tony Stark, Iron Man's position as the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., a global government, the police and peacekeeping force. And what he then does is put all of his fellow criminals in various places. You know, they're now running the ATF squads. He's assembled a new team of Avengers where he's taken villains and they're taking over the identities of various, superheroes and stuff. It's kind of a what if the villains were in charge. So that's the basic premise.
And whenever the villains are in charge, you can basically guarantee that everything's going to go to hell.
Well, when you've got the guy in charge saying, okay, why don't you go assassinate that person? And if you want to go rob those people blind, that's fine. Just don't get caught. I can only cover so much.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate in corruption.
Yes. And I might add, as many people do know at this point, at this particular moment in time, Barack Obama is president of the Marvel Universe. So, that's a bit of a difference there between Marvel and DC, because... Adam, this has basically almost always been true, I assume, other than the most recent couple of years. But DC tends to not really go for current presidents as their presidents, at least over the past couple of years, to avoid the whole time shift thing.
Yeah, and also to avoid controversy, I assume. But for a little while, actually, Lex Luthor was the president of the USA in the DC universe. And right now it's just, President Generic Man.
Well, they've actually had a couple of editorial slip-ups where in a recent Superman issue, I forget if it was Superman or Action or whatever, it actually looked like President Bush.
Oh, really?
But, And in the past, they've had JFK and other people as president in the DC stuff. But
well, that's true. It's true. Superman actually met JFK. It's true.
So, but they try to have more fictional ones so they have a little more story freedom and don't date their stories.
Obviously, with JSA, Roosevelt and stuff like that had a big influence on what they were doing, too.
Yeah.
All right, and let's go here to, I guess, more of the terminology thing going on. And, John, this is obviously your wheelhouse. So, first off, what is previews? And... How would it affect someone who is trying to begin picking up comics on a regular basis?
Previews is the monthly catalog of new comics. It is published by Diamond. Diamond's the primary distributor of new comic books. That's where comic book stores get their comics from. There is also Marvel Previews, which is an additional supplement covering the new Marvel stuff. Now, these things are kind of like TV Guide, except they're covering stuff that's like 2 months out. So the next previews that will come out will be the May previews, and it'll cover stuff shipping in July. Now, the main previews is currently around 425 pages. This includes comics, magazines, books, toys, T-shirts, videos, all kinds of stuff. And then there's the Marvel previews, which is usually over 100 pages. For people just starting out, I would recommend maybe, picking up a copy of these at your local store if you're really curious about everything that's out there. If you just want to shop off the rack, I completely suggest that that's a very good way to do stuff. But a lot of what's in previews is never going to hit, the local comic shop, no matter how good your comic shop is. It'd be like trying to find out everything that's on TV just by flipping channels. You can do it, but it's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's always the possibility that you might order an issue and it doesn't come out for 7 to 12 months if it's late.
Yes.
Which does happen a lot. actually, this is something that I'd be curious of. Would you recommend someone perhaps picking up a older, or at least asking maybe their comic shop older if they have an older issue of previews that they could just thumb through to maybe get the swing of it before they actually go and place an order via previews?
I would suggest that they shouldn't place an order through previews or use a pull and hold service at a comic store until they bought off the shelf for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Until they figured out what they want. Once they realize this is a title I like, I want to get every issue, then they should talk to their local comic book store, or if they're doing it online or whatever, and say, hey, I want this every month. Mm-hmm. And by telling the store that information, they're able to make sure they have a copy for you every month. These are tough economic times. A lot of stores are trying to order as tight as possible just to where they're not stuck with unsold merchandise. Mm-hmm. There is something to be said, though, for just asking if you can flip through the shop copy of previews while you're at the store just to see what all is being offered.
Just to acclimate yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam, I sort of forget here. Do you actually pre-order, or do you just pick stuff up?
It's been quite a few years since I've had a subscription list at a comic shop. Just because of my work, I live out of state for about half the year, so it's kind of hard to maintain a subscription list, and I'm not even going to that shop half the time. So I sort of split my time between ordering all my comics online and getting all of them at the local shop.
All right, and ordering them online, you're still doing the whole 2 months in advance thing, right?
Yes, and it's a deal where I pick and choose individual issues. It's not something where I say, okay, send me automatically this title every single month.
Right. Okay.
It's always a la carte.
Gotcha. Yeah. I actually sort of do the same thing. I mean, I've never really been that much of a straight previews guy. However, if it's in front of me, I'll thumb through it and say, oh, wow, that looks cool, that's awesome, so on and so forth. Chris, do you actually use previews for your purchasing?
I don't use it to... I order most of my comics online, so I don't use it to subscribe via a physical store, but I do use it to get what's coming out when I'm placing my order through. I get my comics through a discount comic book service. So I do order previews every month to look through it to see, you know, and most of the solicitations are published online a couple weeks before the previews hits shops. But I usually still get the copy of preview so I can look at all the independent solicitations that I might want to place an order through. And also, it also has some of the upcoming, you know, like DVD releases. Like, I didn't know that, you know, pretty soon they're going to have the cartoon releases of the X-Men cartoons of the 90s.
Yes.
You know, I didn't know that was coming out. But previews, I was flipping through it, got to that in the DVD section. I was like, all right. So I'll be picking those up. So I think it's a... You know, it can be a little intimidating if you're just getting into comics, because here's this 400-page tome of all these, you know, hundreds of comic books that you could potentially order. So I think, like John suggested, you might want to, if you're going to be getting your comic books through a local store, you might want to get off the rack for a couple of weeks so you'll, you know, find which titles you like and want to get on a monthly basis. And also, since we've already mentioned that not all stores are able to get a lot of independent books, it's also a nice way to see what independents they are, you know, likely to get in.
Mm-hmm. And can I just say it's about damn time on that X-Men animated series, man?
Hell yes.
I mean, that was probably as essential to me starting to pick up comics as anything.
Cause, you know, I'm the same way with you, man.
Yeah, because I mean, if not for that series, and it was just so damn fun. You know, for a kid, and I'm sure it was just about as fun for any you know, comic book fan who was older than us, you know, going and picking it up. It was just genuine good times, which I guess you can maybe compare Wolverine and the X-Men right now, is sort of doing a little bit of the same thing to a bunch of people, I'm sure, introducing them to the world of the X-Men.
Right.
Now, going along those lines, one of the other things that I wanted to mention here were gateway comics. You know, comics that... If you were to find, for example, a Wolverine and the X-Men, and you then wanted to go into the shop and, you know, perhaps pick up an X-Men comic or whatever, what do you feel are current gateway comics that people might be able to enjoy? Going from one medium to another and actually continuing to pick up comics after that. We'll start with you, Chris.
If it's X-Men, I would definitely say probably you could get Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men. Mm-hmm. That's collected in trade. The first volume, I think, is called Gifted. I think that would probably be a great jumping on point. If you want to read more Teenage Peter Parker, like we've already said, Ultimate Spider-Man would be a good choice. Mm-hmm. If you're watching the Batman, the Brave, and the Bold cartoon, which is a fantastic cartoon, and any parents out there listening should show their children that cartoon if they want to get them into comic books, because that cartoon is just fantastic.
Definitely.
I wouldn't recommend the comic book, because I've actually gotten a couple issues of that, because I'm such a big fan of the cartoon myself, even though I'm not the target audience. That cartoon's too fun for anybody to be able to resist. But the comic book is... It has the same team-up aspect that you get in the cartoon, but it's not really in the same tone as the cartoon. It's kind of like reading an old Silver Age Batman comic, to be honest, you know, reading it. So I'm trying to think of a good comic right now that you could transition from Batman the Brave and the Bold. And
well, how about picking up a Blue Beetle trade?
Yeah, Blue Beetle. That's because he's made a couple of appearances on the cartoon, so people would be familiar with him from there. And also, that's kind of a fun comic book series. It's over now, but it was coming out through DC, and it's a fun series.
Still technically continuing, you know. I mean, it's going to be the
in
backup
Booster Gold.
In Booster Gold, yeah. So yeah. There is still a way to keep track of your Blue Beetle. Anything else out there? I mean, any other movie or whatever? Really, anybody can throw it out there. I mean, Adam, you got anything?
I'm thinking. You know, up until this whole Death of Batman, Battle for the Cowl stuff started up, I would have said Detective Comics. Since a lot of those have been self-contained, at least, like one- or two-issue stories.
Yeah. Well, also if you were a fan of the 90s Batman, that might be something to pick up. At least the early Dini trades of Detective mm-hmm. were very similar in style to that.
Well, why not? They're written by Dini.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest various things by, like, Boom, Dynamite, and IDW. Boom right now is doing a bunch of stuff with Farscape, Eureka, The Muppets, a bunch of Pixar properties like The Incredibles, Toy Story, Cars, Finding Nemo. So if you like those properties, Boom has a ton of things to check out. Dynamite has Zorro and the Lone Ranger. Those are a bit, you know, older properties or whatever, but pretty good. And then IDW has got a bunch of stuff that, you know, you'd be familiar with from other places, like the Transformers. They've got the Star Trek license. They've got the G.I. Joe license. They've got Doctor Who. They've got Angel. Trying to think if they've got one or two other properties. Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And then Dark Horse has Star Wars and Buffy. I mean, there are a lot of things that, you know, if you like various TV shows or movies and stuff, there's a decent chance there's a comic book based on it. There have been comics based on Chuck, on Supernatural, on, let's see, what other TV shows?
Pushing Daisies is coming up.
Yeah, Pushing Daisies. Same with video games. Gears of War has a comic book.
Fringe. X-Files. Fringe.
World of Warcraft.
Halo.
Incredibly light, but...
Okay. But, you know, if you're into video games, if you like TV shows, if you like movies...
Oh, Dark Tower.
Yeah, exactly. There are a lot of novels being turned into comics and stuff.
Yeah.
IDW's done, I think, Dracula was one. They're going to be doing an adaptation of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? So, I mean, there are a lot of properties you may already be familiar with at the comic book stores right now.
Can I just say how good a job Boom has been doing over the past couple months with those properties that they've acquired with? I mean... Almost every licensed property that they're doing is as good as what you're seeing on the screen.
Yeah. I think Boom is doing a lot to really expand the comic audience.
Yeah. Getting Mark Waid as their EIC was probably a good move.
Definitely a good move. I mean, geez. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Even if he is evil.
Oh, but he's evil in all the right ways, Adam.
At least he's upfront about it. And what we're talking about here is they're doing an ad campaign of Mark Waid is evil for one of his books.
Yeah. Don't worry. He's not actually the devil, we promise. All right. So let's move over to Overstreet and Back Issues, because I think they're sort of companions a little bit. The Overstreet Guide. What should people be using it for? And how much money should people be spending on back issues? Like, what do you think the limit is for a back issue that's not, say, epic in comic book land? You know, we're not talking like Amazing Spider-Man number 1 here. We're talking about, you know, Amazing Spider-Man number 567, you know, whatever. Just random comic here and there. Like, what's the most anybody should be spending on any of those? Really, whoever has the most experience with the Overstreet Guide, I think, should answer this. So let's throw it out there. If it's Adam, if it's John, if it's Chris, whatever.
Do you want to take this, Adam, or do you want me to?
You go right ahead.
Okay. Overstreet is the official Overstreet comic book price guide. It's been coming out nearly 40 years. Volume 39 just came out. I've got 38 in my hands at the moment. It is huge. It's over 1,000 pages. It's the de facto price guide that most people use. Now, there are other price guides out there. There's the comic book comic buyer's guide price guide.
Didn't that just cease publication?
Overstreet?
Buyer's guide?
I don't believe so, but I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. I thought I had heard that somewhere, but I could be wrong. But anyway, sorry to throw you off track there.
No, it's okay. Comics Value Annual is another one, and the Standard Catalog of Comics. The Standard Catalog of Comics has actually gone to a DVD format because it was so gargantuan. It's like 3,000 or 4,000 pages. It's insane.
Jeez.
And there are online price guides. Comicspriceguide.com is one. Basically, the things you need to know about price guides, price is based on the contents of the book and the condition of the book. On the condition of the book, when you hear terms like mint, near mint, very good, and all that stuff, what they're talking about is the grading of the comic. Now, there is an official Overstreet comic book grading guide, and I've got the third edition sitting in my hands here, which is over like 350 pages. So if you want a lot of information about grading comics, this is the book for you. For beginners, don't bother. I would go to metropoliscomics.com. On the bottom of the main page, there's a little link that says grading guide. Click on that. On that page, there'll be a link that says Overstreet grading criteria, and they've got a really good explanation of what the various conditions are and the order they're in. Mm-hmm. You know, it starts at mint and it goes down. And frankly, I mean, I usually have a little reference sheet I use just to make sure I'm getting the orders right. I mean, I do the same thing when I play poker. You know, does a straight beat a flush or what? You know, I can never remember.
To an average collector, I assume it wouldn't really matter that much if a book is in mint or very good condition, as long as they're getting the story they want to read.
Yeah, it comes down to, you know, how badly do you want to read the story and how nice do you like your comics? If you don't care about the condition, you can go down to good or fair and not have a problem. Personally, I tend not to go much below, you know, very fine. Sometimes I'll go to fine. I usually don't go down to very good. I don't like that condition personally. Mm-hmm. My co-host Bob, a lot of what he buys is down in that condition, but he's also buying a lot older and more expensive books than I tend to be buying. Mm-hmm. I rarely spend more on a back issue than I would pay for a new comic book, and rarely more than I'd pay for a new comic book at a 40% discount like I get at Discount Comic Book Service.
Right.
Because I'm cheap, and I'll be honest, I haven't bought back issues for many, many, many months due to budget cuts and stuff. But really, it comes down to how much are you willing to pay for the comic? You know, I recommend spending as little as possible and as much as you're willing and can afford. And it's easy to kind of go nuts on back issue buying. I've done it a time or two myself. There's some great places to get them online. MyComicShop.com is a good place. Torpedo Comics has a 99-cent section. And if you can find what you're looking for there, I recommend it. ComicCollectorLive.com is a place Bob, my co-host, has been using lately. He seems happy with that. And if your comic book store has back issue bins, and some do, a lot don't, that's worth looking at too.
And it really is a crapshoot when it comes to, whether or not you're really going to find what you're looking for. You know, I mean, every comic shop is going to have a different back issue selection.
Well, if they even have a back issue selection.
Right.
Some stores don't. I mean, half the stores here in town don't.
That's true. Yeah. Well, and
That's part of why I like doing it online. I mean, you go to mycomicshop.com, you're looking for a particular issue of Batman or Spider-Man or the Hulk or whatever. You type it into the search box, you say go, and it's pretty quick and easy to find. Which can be expensive if you use that too often.
Right. So, Adam, how much for you is, I guess, the right amount to spend on a back issue?
Yeah, it depends entirely on what the comic is and how badly you personally want to own it. Myself, I agree with John as far as being cheap and not wanting to, you know, spend too much on back issues at this point in time. Typically, I've learned to enjoy the art of quarter bin diving. Just going to various comic shop discount sales and going to conventions and looking at the cheap clearance bins there and just letting the low price be the criteria and see what the best comics are I can find in that price range. Actually, I find that recently I've been using the Overstreet Guide more for reference as to what happens in individual issues, more for anything else. Like if I say I can't remember what issue Ace the Bat-Hound first appeared in, I'll just get out Overstreet and look down the back issues of Batman and Detective Comics until I find where it says, like, I, Ace the Bat-Hound. And I really don't use it so much to look up what the fair price is that I should be paying for back issues, so much as either to find out information like I just described, or maybe if I find something for cheap in a quarter bin, I might then look at the Overstreet Guide to find out how much I could, in theory, charge for this cheap comic I've just bought, if I were to go out and like flip it on eBay. Not that I really do that.
Right.
And when I buy comics, I typically, it's just mine to keep, and I don't do a lot of reselling. But so for me, it's more about what I can get for the smallest amount of money.
What is the most you've ever spent?
Excellent question. I'm not sure I'm pretty sure I've never spent more than $40 on a single issue,
okay.
If that.
All right, so reasonable.
The most I can remember spending specifically on a comic book, probably about $30 for like a Silver Age issue of Superman or World's Finest.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Chris, how about you?
I would say that I do a bit of back issue buying because I collect early 60s issues of Batman and Detective Comics, which is a very kind of specific collecting area, I would say. But I use eBay most of the time. And I get mostly in the very good condition because, and I think this is what's been said before, is if you want really as good a condition a copy as you can, or if you just want to read it. And with me, since most of these issues of Batman and Detective have never been reprinted before, I just want to pick them up to read them. So I usually get them in the good plus to very good range. You know, they look pretty good. There's a little bit of wear on them, you know, but they're perfectly readable, you know, perfectly good for reading. I usually spend between $10 and $12 at most if I'm getting one of those issues. That's usually what I'm able to win them for, and I usually use eBay when I'm picking those up. Mm-hmm. And I would also say that if you want to go back issue diving, you know, $1 bins and 25-cent bins are really nice if you're looking for some of the Bronze Age stuff. I know in the Baltimore con I was at, I was able to find issues 1 through 4 of Ambush Bug for $1 each.
Nice.
Yeah, which is a really good mini. And the most I've ever spent on a comic book, which was a little Christmas present to me, Christmas and birthday present to me was issue Amazing Spider-Man number 6, which was about $150.
That's actually not too bad for that.
Yeah, and it's probably my favorite issue of Amazing Spider-Man, first appearance of the Lizard, and I was able to get it off of mycomicshop.com, which John mentioned, which I use a number of times, which I find that they are very reasonably priced, I would say, on their back issues. And I would suggest if you want to read old comics, you don't have to settle for just the back issues. If you want to read, and I think this is something we'll probably get in the terminology about the different ages of comic books, but if you wanted to read the comic books from the so-called Silver Age, and you don't mind reading them in black, you can pick up the Essentials over at Marvel and the Showcase Presenter at DC, which retail for about $16.99, and they have over 500 pages of comics from the Silver Age and the Bronze Age that are in black and white. And if you don't mind reading them in black and white, that there's a lot of value for your money if you're interested in reading those old stories.
I shall. Eventually, yeah. All right, so let's go a little bit into the terminology, and then I think we can roll over to the forum comments and end this baby up. So yeah, Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, and whatever the hell you would call today. give me about your time frame as to when this begins or ends, because again, this is all up to interpretation as well, depending on who you ask. But yeah, let's begin with John here.
Golden Age is really from kind of the dawn of comics to, we'll say, roughly the 60s, and it varies a little from publisher to publisher. Silver Age, kind of the 60s to late 70s or whatever. Some people would call from like the 80s to, I don't know where, maybe the Bronze Age. And then we got kind of what we got now. And usually kind of the mid-80s does seem to be a bit of a turning point, certainly for DC with Crisis. A little bit less so for Marvel. I would say for Marvel, a turning point was more in the 90s when we'll say the quality took a noticeable change. I mean, there are a lot of people. We've all heard stories of people saying, well, I got out of comics in the 90s or whatever. So I take that for what it's worth. Yeah, I mean, there doesn't seem to be a consensus on what to call the current era of comics, much less when it really began.
Yeah, I've heard Platinum Age. I've also heard like about 17 other. I think Precious Metals is really what they're trying to find here.
Aluminum, zinc, right. Tin,
copper,
uranium. I don't know.
Kryptonium. I don't know, but yeah. Let's just call it today. How about that?
That works.
Adam, does your definition vary at all from that?
Not much. Golden Age, you know, from the beginning of comics up till... I think of the Golden Age as ending around the late 40s, early 50s. And
that's fair. I can see that. Okay.
And I think of there as being kind of a gap, like a no man's land of time, in between the end of the Golden Age and the start of the Silver Age a little bit later on. I've heard some people call the 50s the Atomic Age. And then somewhere in the late 50s, a common starting place for the Silver Age is cited as like 1956 with the Showcase and the first appearance of Barry Allen, the Silver Age Flash. And then the Silver Age lasts us from like the late 50s right on up through the 60s. Oftentimes you hear the 70s referred to as the Bronze Age. And sometimes now, I mean, I know at least one high-end back issue dealer that we've spoken to on Comic Geek Speak has referred to the 80s as the Copper Age. So now the 80s are getting divided off by some people into their own little time frame. Hmm. And then you get into from the 90s on up to the present, it's that's when we get into that unclassifiable age. What do you call it? The Iron Age or the Dark Age or the Platinum Age, whatever you want to call it.
Bizarro Age, why not?
You like that.
I personally tend not to worry too much about, you know, the various ages. I mean, really, it's there are differences in storytelling style. Mm-hmm. You know, the Golden Age tends to be almost more of a slideshow mentality of, You know, Superman's, you know, is on Krypton, he's born, next panel it blows up, next panel he's on Earth, next panel he's Superman 20 years later, you know. Silver Age tended to be more the wacky sci-fi adventure type stuff. And then, you know, the more modern age tends to be the more grim and gritty and stuff, and the social relevance movement and stuff. Flipping through Overstreet, they mention a couple before the Golden Age of the Platinum Age, the Victorian Age, the Pioneer Age, and they're going back to like the 1500s.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it just depends how much you want to break it down and really why you want to break it down.
Eventually we get to comic book BC.
Pretty much, yeah.
Jeez. Oh, boy. Yeah, well, and Bronze Age, that's the one that's now the Bronze Age, or did the Bronze Age end?
Or is there the Bronze Age ended.
It ended? Okay, all right. So that ended at what, the beginning of the 90s?
I would say.
All right, gotcha. Now we're in the Internet Age.
Yeah, I would have said that it ended somewhere in the early to mid-80s, actually.
Okay, all right. That makes sense. And Chris, you're in the same definition, I assume?
Yeah, I tend to think of the Golden Age as somewhere in the 30s all the way up to about 1951, which I believe was when All-Star Comics number 57 was published, which was the final appearance of the Justice Society of America. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much signaled the end of the superhero, which were really big in the 40s, and it pretty much transitioned from there to All-Star Western number 58, and that was where you get the Western comics, and that's where we kind of get the Atomic Age, where superheroes aren't really that popular until 1956 with Showcase number 4 and the debut of Barry Allen. And then I've been poking around trying to figure out an endpoint for the Silver Age, because I think there's kind of different ways you can signal the end of the Silver Age. You know, some people say it's when Jack Kirby left Marvel because he was, you know, a big part of Marvel entering the Silver Age with Fantastic Four, of course. Mm-hmm. You've got when the Amazing Spider-Man drug issues came out without the Comics Authority seal, which had pretty much put all the restrictions on comics ever since Frederick Wortham's Crusade. But I usually, since I'm a Spider-Man guy, I usually put it as Amazing Spider-Man number 121, which was the night Gwen Stacy died, as the end of the Silver Age.
You sentimentalist.
Now, the night she died, or when she was actually killed? Are we going early evening? No, I'm just kidding.
It was a cold night in December.
And then you guys are a hell of a lot better on the dates than I am. Jeez.
Yeah. So was it the very moment her neck broke? Was that it?
Yeah, because that kind of symbolizes, at least I see it as kind of symbolizing a loss of innocence type moment, because the Silver Age was all about, you know, it was these really kind of fun, over at DC we had, at least starting out in the Silver Age, all these fun, you know, kind of goofy stories that would really spark a kid's imagination. And then in Silver Age Marvel, you have commies getting punched and all this uplifting stuff. And then
so very uplifting to punch some commies.
Not so much for the commies, but, you know, hey.
For the Americans, you know. And then, you know, you've got Spider-Man, who has always been, you know, Peter Parker following his life. You know, you got him in high school, he's going through college, his love life, you know, finding the money to pay the rent, and you see, you know, his girlfriend, you know, die at the hands of his greatest enemy. And I just really think that's a really strong moment that kind of just signals, you know, the transition from one age to another. Part of the 80s, you get, you know, your Dark Knight Returns, your Watchmen. That's kind of the start of the modern comics. And then you get the 90s, which explodes into the speculator type era, which I thought that, you know, before, I hope I'm not overstepping on your toes, Ian, but I thought that we, for people who might be getting into comics, I think we might want to talk a bit about the speculator aspect of the industry a little bit.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. Why not?
That's a good point. I think anyone who's getting into comics as an investment shouldn't. Granted, I still think they're going to do better than the stock market these days, but what won't?
You're never going to be able to buy a house with any of the comic books you buy today, all right? I don't care if it's a number one, all right?
Well, most people aren't going to be able to do that with their 401k anyways.
That is true. That is very true. But you know, I know that these days they print enough copies of comic books where it's going to have to take a lot for a comic book to actually be worth anything these days.
Well, the irony is people are buying, you know, maybe that Obama copy of Spider-Man because they think it'll be worth something. And there's over 500,000 copies out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you go on the other end of the spectrum to some of these smaller publishers and stuff, and they're printing maybe 5,000 copies in some cases. You know, part of the reason Walking Dead, the first issue, is worth around $100 or whatever it is these days is because there are only about 6,000 copies out there. It's legitimately worth that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're getting into comics to try to make a profit or something like that, I really urge you not to. Comics are entertainment, and they're meant to be read, not treated as a commodity.
And hey, I mean, just because I bag and board them doesn't mean that I actually want to sell them someday, you know? I mean, there might come a time where, you know, I come to a realization in my life that, oh no, I've been misspending my years and I want to sell it all off in one chunk, but that I doubt is going to happen. And for that matter, I might even just bind this stuff. You know, that's how little I'm placing on being able to actually sell all of this as what it is, because apparently when you bind something, it gets it immediately goes up in price. Just going on the few times that I've looked on eBay and I've seen these binded editions for large sums.
The listeners of my podcast posted a thread on my forum where he had put up like half a dozen or a dozen bound collections,
mm-hmm.
and he made like $3,000 or $4,000 off these things.
Was this Travis?
I think yep, so, yeah.
Okay. Close.
Yeah. It was astonishing how much some of that stuff went for.
I guess it is just because, hey, this is the one edition that they can find that looks like this.
Yeah, but again, your mileage may vary. I would not suggest buying comics, binding them, and flipping them on eBay mm-hmm. thinking you'll make a fortune. Maybe you will, maybe you won't.
Yeah.
But that's the wrong reason to be doing this.
And the days of the holofoil cover might almost be over. Because, you know, there seems to still be the occasional comic that goes back to the days of the 90s. But the days of the 90s where everything looked like that, I think, are pretty much done at this point.
Holofoil covers, yes. Variant covers, alternate covers, no.
Yes.
We still got another few years of that, I think.
And let's touch on that real quick. Adam, in your honest opinion, should people give a damn about variant covers?
Only if they have reasons of their own find them attractive or aesthetically pleasing. Not for financial or collector's reasons, I wouldn't think. Just buy whatever version of the cover looks best to you and then that you can afford the best. Because I understand sometimes variant covers carry greater price tags.
Right. I've only bought a couple of variant covers, and it was because, well, they were pretty. And that's it. You know, I mean, sure, I might have spent $8 on it, but I'm not going to spend like $150 on like the 1-in-100 variant on things because I think that's just silly. But I will on occasion treat myself to a pretty cover. I'll admit that. That's all it is though, pretty. You know, it's not something that I'm going to spend and immediately afterwards say, "Oh my God, I'm going to be able to pay off my mortgage with this comic book," because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Adam. Do it because it makes you happy,
mm-hmm.
you know? I think the next issue of Justice Society's got three covers that kind of join together to form a picture of the entire team or whatever. You know, budget cuts, I'm getting one of them, but if it weren't for the budget cuts, I'd probably have gotten all three.
Yeah.
Because it makes me happy.
Yeah.
So I'm sad. No.
You know, I really should just add in like the Droopy the Dog music.
You know what?
And that makes me sad. Well, hey, for all you know that eventually you could find it for $2 a piece or something at a con.
That's what my co-host keeps telling me. Bob keeps telling me you can get them in the quarter bin. You can get them in the quarter bin.
Well,
absolutely.
But speaking of co-hosts, I mean, Brent is pretty damn close to you know, just stopping collecting certain things and just waiting until the next convention and just picking them all up in the dollar bins, because a lot of current comics get overbought by realtors and then wind up in dollar bins because of that.
My concern, though, is that with this economy, the retailers are really kind of coming close to the vest on how they order and stuff, and that while that may be true for how things have been going, I don't think retailers can afford to keep going down that road, because everything they put in a quarter bin or whatever, they're really losing money on.
Yeah.
And it's better to liquidate the stuff and get some money for it. And certainly I think that's a smart move for the retailers if it's on an exception basis and not something they're doing on a routine basis. No, so I definitely. Just I every time I hear somebody say, oh, yeah, you can always get that in the dollar bin and stuff. Maybe you can. But to me, that's a little scary.
Yeah, because you got to hope and pray it's the right dollar bin.
Well, no, I'd rather the store stick around for another year to where they'll at least have it on the shelf.
Point.
Versus, you know, too many dollar bins and they go under. So, and I'm not saying that having a dollar bin equates to a store going under. It does not.
Yes.
But
you'd still much rather them be nice and happy and actually selling everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm there. I'm totally there. All right, I think that's sort of all I can think of terminology wise. I mean, unless there's anything that I'm forgetting off the top of my head here, boys, you know, fill in if there's anything else that you think you need to add.
Well, we talked about binding a couple of minutes ago. Would it make sense to go into more detail about that?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Might as well. Well, yeah. Hey, you brought it up, Adam. So how about you start it?
Okay. When we say binding, we mean taking individual issues of monthly comic books and basically sending them away to have your own custom hardcovers made out of them. There are certain services you can send them to. There's one that's a sponsor on our own podcast called Library Binding, a conveniently memorable name, that you can send your comics away to them, and they will send you back a very nice hardcover with all your comics bound together into a single volume in whatever order you so choose. They'll even put special cover decorations on there for you if you want. They have special die stamps that they can put on the spine. If you send them a particular piece of art that you want to be laminated onto the front cover, they can do that for you. So it's like your own very own custom-made trade paperbacks or hardcovers. And more and more people seem to be doing that lately and selling them as collector's items on eBay afterwards.
Well, that, and it's certainly a good way to clear out some space. Like, I mean, if you have, like, five long boxes, and I'll describe what a long box is right now for people who don't know. It's basically a storage box that people use for their comic books. There's short boxes, which are the smaller versions, and then long boxes, the longer ones. I mean, you can clear out, like, almost, like, maybe an entire long box if you know, spend it the right way at a library binding or whatever, and then you replace that one long box with six hardcovers sitting on a shelf, and hey, you're sitting pretty. For someone living in a small apartment, binding might be the way to go.
It just seems you're shifting the space in the comic boxes to space on the bookcase, but okay.
well, but also think about it this way. How much easier is it to take off of a bookshelf and show to a friend a bound copy than going through your long boxes and trying to find 20 issues?
Well, and the other thing, going back to the does it make you happy, you know, aspect, some of them look really nice. Bob showed me the bound version he got of like Who's Who and a few other things. And I mean, Library Binding does a nice, I'm pretty sure that's where he went through, mm-hmm. does some nice work. It looks very professional, very polished. And it looks a hell of a lot more impressive than just a stack of, you know, 20 or whatever comics.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So. Yeah. I mean, I saw a bunch of library bindings. I'm pretty sure it was actually Green Capped on the forums who showed them to me at MegaCon that were amazing. And, you know, he basically made his own trades of the, you know, the Sinestro Corps War, which was great because he was able to put it, you know, in the order of, you know, Green Lantern Corps, and actually have it be the way that he wanted it as opposed to other, you know, the other trades, which don't include everything. He was able to do that himself, which was certainly fun. And, yeah, I think that's sort of it. So let's head over to the forum comments here. Let's head over to Matthew Guy, his answer to what I posted on the forums, that is. What is previews and what is Diamond? He says, the catalog that lists Dark Horse, DC, Image, and Marvel that is being dispensed through Diamond, a.k.a. a Monopoly distributor. That's his parentheses there. That's not the opinions of everyone on this cast. And in the rest of the catalog is the indie section. How do you go about ordering from Diamond? He says, I look by the list of writers and the titles they are on, mainly in the DC and Vertigo section of my favorite titles. Superman family of titles, Green Lantern, Fables, plus Amazing Spider-Man from Marvel and Walking Dead from Image, etc. How much or how little should one spend on a back issue? He says, my max is $20, and it was on the first printing of Batman Mad Love. What is Batman Mad Love? I'm sorry for being...
It was Tim Paul Dini prestige format.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it's basically the origin of Harley Quinn.
Gotcha.
It was turned into an episode of the new Batman Adventures, which was on WB.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. All right. Give it the definitive definition for graphic novels. He says, not a dime's different between graphic novels and trades, unless you're talking about an original graphic novel. See, he adds the original to it, so which makes it an OGN, original graphic novel. I guess that might be the better way to put it to stop people from being confused, but in which the published work that is first collected only in this format, i.e. Fables, 1001 Nights of Snowfall, and a trade is just a collection of issues, and if you're talking about a trade from mainstream DC, you better have the patience of Job in waiting for it. Job, same thing.
that's very true.
yes, definitely. Yeah, maybe we should just add that original to the before graphic novel just to make things a little easier for our definition of it, at least, that we seem to put on this cast.
Yeah.
Right. To me, it seems a little redundant, but, I mean, yeah.
Right.
It's clearer. I can't argue that.
True.
I'll also say, though, that I tend to use trade and not trade paperback, but trade is kind of a synecdoche to cover both, you know, all kind of collected editions, be it softcover or hardcover.
Okay. All right, cool. That works. And a few trades and comic series that he might give as gateway books. He says Superman for All Seasons and All-Star Superman. Superman for All Seasons is actually a Jeff Loeb and a Tim Sale project. While All-Star Superman was written by Grant Morrison with art by Frank Quitely, I would highly recommend both of those for when it comes to Superman. I mean, both of those are wonderful stories that are pretty timeless as well. You don't have to worry about continuity nearly as much with those titles as you do with some other Superman books. Batman Year One and Long Halloween, again, two classic Batman books right there. Spider-Man, Kraven's Last Hunt, which is a J.M.D. Mateus, another great writer. And Brand New Day trades for a new continuity altogether, or Ultimate Spider-Man for the same thing. Daredevil, Man Without Fear miniseries, and any Bendis trade of Daredevil. Man Without Fear, that's Frank Miller, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, that's the Frank Miller, John Romita Jr., if I remember correctly, which was very, very pretty. Also try the After Watchmen promo comics, which we mentioned previously, only $1 to try what suits your interest. And it gives the link. I might as well read it on here. It's dccomics.com/media/special/after_watchmen_checklist.pdf if you want to check out the full list of the After Watchmen specials. For kids, he recommends Owlie, Mouse Guard, Bone, Marvel Adventures titles, and Johnny DC titles. And for adults, he says Preacher, Fables, The Boys, Punisher, and Welcome Back and Punisher Welcome Back Frank. And he says, hope that helps new readers get out into the world of comics. The only one that I'm going to really not quite agree with for new readers is The Boys. Even though it's a good series, I think you probably like it better if you've already read a bunch of superhero comics.
I think it comes down to the personality of the person you're recommending to. I think there are some people that would be an excellent first comic to give to. For, I would say, the majority, probably not. Mm-hmm. I would say the same thing actually about All-Star Superman, though. Some people would love the Silver Age kind of goofiness to it. Other people, that might really turn off. So it comes down to knowing who you're recommending the comic to.
Excellent point there. Yeah. I mean, again, we mentioned it before, but it is very true that if you got to know your audience to recommend it, something that's really, really going to work for them in this situation. And the other comment we got was from Brody is God, and he had basically just recommended things for us to talk about on the show. So I thank you, Brody, for that, as we, I believe, covered everything that he mentioned in this episode here. So, you know what? Before we wrap things up entirely, I got a quick promo to play here before we give everybody their well-deserved plugs and everything. So this one is a plug in and of itself, and it is for the Comic Tube podcast.
You know, Leroy, I really wish that there was a podcast out there that would review movies based on comics like Wolverine or Transformers 2.
But Brett.
And, you know, would talk about all these great TV shows like Smallville, Supernatural, and Heroes.
Yeah, but Brett.
And there's these great video games coming out like Batman Arkham Asylum and Ghostbusters and Terminator.
Brett.
What?
That's us.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And being that you didn't know it was us, I will tell these guys where to find us. We can find us over at www.comic2podcast.blogspot.com. So if you guys want a podcast that reviews movies based on comics, video games, and TV shows,
listen to Comic Tube.
Yeah!
And be excellent to one another.
And party on, dudes.
Party on, dudes.
Wild Stallion!
Nice. Thank you for throwing that in there. All right, Comic Tube. Check it out, guys. It's good stuff, and I would highly recommend it. And you can find them over at, let me get the full website here, comictubepodcast.blogspot.com, and they're also proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. So you can find all their listings over at comicspodcast.com as well. And once again here, folks, we are sponsored by Heroes Corner over at heroescorner.com. No set special this month at Heroes Corner, but there's a bunch that you can save on. And let me give you a couple of them right off the top of my head here. Teen Titans number 73 is 50% off this month, only $2, regular price of $3.99. We've got a bunch of the Blackest Night titles like Tale of the Core. Discounted as well. You've got that for 50% off, and number one is 50% off, that is, and a bunch of the other ones are 40% off. Cyber Force Hunter Killer number one, all the different covers seem to be 50% off here for $1.50. And Marvel Divas, if any of you like boobies, this is going to be 50% off for $2. And the Heroes Corner Picks of the Month this month, New Avengers number 55, written by Brian Michael Bendis with art by Stuart Immonen. 50% off on Heroes Corner, only $2. Justice League Cry for Justice with James Robinson, also 50% off, only $2. And Death Clock versus the Goon, written by Eric Powell, drawn by Eric Powell, only 88 cents, 75% off out of Dark Horse Comics. And don't forget, CT Rocks, CTROCKS, get an additional 5% off on your first order with Heroes Corner. That's for first-time customers of Heroes Corner only. But we want you guys to try Heroes Corner because they are wonderful to us, and they are a wonderful service that will get you your comics fast and efficiently every single month. Best damn customer service around, HeroesCorner.com. All right, boys, I think we've exhausted everything here, so I guess before we wrap it up, let's give everybody their well-deserved plugs for sitting through 2 hours of us talking to ourselves. So, Adam, you got a new project out there, don't you?
Yeah, I guess so. It's the one of these little vanity project spin-off things that we're doing over at Comic Geek Speak these days. It's called Merge Time Bubble, and it's basically just me sitting there talking about comics from 8 years ago that I'm just getting around to reading today, putting them in a bit of hindsight historical context.
Because everything is a back issue to you.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, that's what's great about you, though, man. That I mean, like, you're reading stuff that you know most people read 8 years ago, and it's new to you, and that's great because you haven't gotten jaded yet about all the other previous comics that everybody's like, oh god, oh please. And you can find all that over at comicgeekspeak.com, correct?
Sure thing.
The newly renovated and newly redesigned ComicGeekSpeak.com. So go ahead.
Oh, yes,
that.
Yes, yes. Even if you don't give a damn about my podcast, go look at that website because Brian Deemer, our head honcho, has put so many hours into redoing that website. So much blood, sweat, and tears into just rewriting all the code and making everything look nice and providing extra features for people. It's just go and give it a look, please.
It's very, very pretty. And talk about new websites as well. The other thing that you're, well, I guess, de facto a part of, PKDmedia.com just launched their brand new website. So give one more plug out there to Mr. Sean Pryor over at PKDmedia.com, where you can read the adventures of Mercury and the Murd. Definitely nice looking.
I am the Murd.
All right. Yes, that is indeed you. Mr. Mayo, what you got upcoming on the comic book page?
Let's see, over on the comic book page podcast, let's see, every Monday we do the weekly comic spotlight. We review a DC, a Marvel, and at least one other comic. And for people just getting into comics or trying to figure out what they want to read, that's a good way to kind of get a feel for what's out there and at least what I and my co-host Bob are liking and what we're not and kind of why. You know, so we cover a ton of comics. I think we've covered, you know, at least 150 to 250 different titles over the various episodes of that we've done. Also, once a month, we do a previews spotlight where we go through previews, not cover to cover, but just kind of the highlights of what's in there that caught our eyes. And we play clips from various listeners, Ian and Chris, you guys have both submitted at times, just for, you know, different people's perspective on what looked cool to them. Because previews is huge. Between that and Marvel previews, there's over 500 pages a month. And this is just kind of, you know, again, the highlights of it. We also do a preview spotlight interview episode every month where we talk to a couple of creators and give them a chance to kind of pitch their work to the audience and, you know, try to get some listeners there. And in previews, you're going to get a solicitation blurb and a cover image, and sometimes that's not enough to determine if you want that or not. And, you know, listening to the creators talk about their project can be very informative at times. We also do a back issue spotlight. We haven't done one of these for a while, but we've got about 18 of these episodes out. We review older comics. We also talk about the process of buying back issues, and we've reviewed a number of different back issue dealers. So for people looking to get into, you know, where can I find back issues, where should I shop, where should I not shop, I recommend those episodes. And then we do two episodes a month covering the sales of comic books and trades. I do the Mayo Report comic stuff with my co-host Bob. And then I do the trade edition of that with Chris Marshall of the Collected Comics Library. And then the other thing we do every month that I think people who've been, you know, enjoying this episode about getting back into comics would like is Bob and I host a previews teleconference on Skype every month. And we go through previews, again, from front to back, not necessarily page by page. And if people are curious, gee, is this writer any good? Would I like this comic? You know, have you ever heard of this artist or whatever? We go into a lot of tangent discussions like that. And it's a good way to kind of get recommendations on, you know, which comics you would like and not like. And you can find the information about all of this over on the comicbookpage.com website.
And sometimes you even stop to sleep.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we also have guest episodes. We've had some really good ones on Final Crisis that Chris has been doing for us.
Hey, Chris. You've been doing these episodes, haven't you? Why don't you tell us more about it?
Well, basically, me and my friend Juan Castro, we're part of the, I guess, maybe 1% who actually liked Final Crisis. And
was it that high?
Well, I was going to say 10, but I thought, that's probably reaching, so I might want to go lower.
Well, no. It's more like you're one of the 1% that might have understood it after one reading.
That's probably true. But basically, me and Juan, we just really liked it, and John put out the offer that anybody who would want to take up the task of analyzing it, he'd be happy to host it. So me and Juan were like, hey, we could do that. And so me and Juan are going issue by issue according to Grant Morrison, the reading list. We're not doing all the tie-ins. We're just covering all of the Grant Morrison written issues according to the reading list that he posted on Newsarama how many months ago. And we go page by page, panel by panel in some cases, pointing out all the little clues hidden here and there and describing what's going on and giving our interpretations on why some things might be in there. And we just put up an episode doing issues 1 and 2 of Superman Beyond. And it'll be a couple of weeks before we get another episode out because Juan's absolutely swamped with ink inking gigs. He's an inker by trade, and he's got a lot of stuff for various different companies he's working on right now. But this Saturday, we're hoping to get together and get two episodes in the can that we can put out.
Cool. I'm looking forward to that.
I'll have to catch up. Maybe you'll actually make me like Final Crisis more.
Well, I think that we've had one or two people actually say that they've enjoyed it more thanks to us analyzing it, which is probably the best compliment we could get doing it.
I certainly feel that way. I mean, you've caught a couple of things I didn't and stuff, and you've made me rethink a few things. And, you know, part of the price Chris is paying for me hosting these episodes is, you know, as I'm getting ready to put it up, I'm listening through the whole episode and I'm taking all kinds of notes. It's like, hey, what about this? Oh, good catch, you know, whatever. So, you know, I'll start a thread on our forum where I don't want to say I rip the episode or the issue apart, but, you know, I kind of give my thoughts and, you know, jumpstart the conversation on the forum. Nice. Chris has been very indulgent in putting up with that.
Well,
I enjoy the interaction because you've certainly caught things Juan and I have missed, and I think that's a nice back and forth we have on the forum going through these.
And don't forget, John's also the only person in the world who would actually host Just Bill's podcast.
Somebody had to.
And you know what, Tris? You know what people should do, actually? They should just go back. They should listen to your Final Crisis number one stuff along with Sean and Jim's Final Crisis stuff and just do it back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and the love fest might actually work.
Well, it would warm my heart if more people saw Final Crisis through the same lens I do.
Wait, it would warm your heart or worm your heart?
Warm. I would hope that a worm would not be in my heart because that would.
It would at least warm the worms in his heart. And that's good enough.
Exactly.
I don't.
That's why I was trying to get out.
And that's why he had to end the Amazing Spider-Cast because he has worms. All right, let's roll over here. I think we're basically done. One of the more subdued episodes of Comic Timing in the past couple of months. Yet again, I'll blame Brent not being here. But first off, Adam, thank you kindly for joining us for the first time here on Comic Timing, and I hope to have you back again at some point.
Well, pleasure was all mine, Ian. I hope I said something useful.
Oh, you most certainly did, man. No one understands crisis better than you.
Okay, well, thank you for saying so.
You're very welcome. And John, welcome back. Don't be a stranger.
Okay, I come as often as you invite.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, I'll make sure to actually press reply on that email. And Chris, same thing to you. You know, whenever you happen to be on Skype, I'll just message you and then we can do an episode.
Sounds like fun.
All right, people. Well, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. We're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley, and please give us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. More than anything, the iTunes reviews on iTunes help us out a great deal. More people get into the show that way, and more people might get into comics that way, too, so hey, you never know. So once again, thanks to everybody on the call for being on the call, and as always, there's always time for comics. Yeah, although amusingly enough, and this is great, like I almost feel like I'm my job is like one shade away from working at a comic shop because I'm actually, and yes, this is my job description. I'm packing boxes so that they can be sent off to Google. Because they're old law books. I'm working at the Law Institute in New York. And they're sending all these old law books off to Google so that they can get scanned in and that people can actually use these books as opposed to being buried away in a basement where no one can see them.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, so that's what I'll be doing for the next 2 months or so, 3 days a week. But it's heavy lifting, so maybe I'll lose some pounds.
So you're one of those top men from Indiana Jones.
You're going to unearth the holy, the Ark of the Covenant eventually.
And you know, surprisingly enough, it does sort of look that way. The room I'm in, it's dark, it's dank, it's like, you could imagine that you open up a box and all of a sudden it'll be something that Indy unearthed somewhere.
You should watch the Noah Wiley TV films, The Librarian.
Oh, God. The guy who got me the job, my friend, we actually bought him both DVDs to those, and they're one of his favorite movies now, and he's now a wall librarian, so there you go.
They're actually not bad.
Yeah, they're pretty fun for TV movies that are, you know, derivatives of other works. So not too bad.
It's becoming more serious, more serious, more serious, more serious, more serious, more serious.
Hello?
Turner.
Are you guys still there?
Yeah, we're here.
Hello?
Yep. Yeah. Sorry.
Still here.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We sort of lost you there for a minute. I'm in the same wheelhouse. I'm sorry, I cut you off there. What were you going to say?
Well, not really.
All right, and we're out.
Cool.
Excellent day.
Awesome.
So since everyone but Brent was on the call, I'm sure everybody's going to say best episode ever.
Without question.
Oh,
hey, you got the Murd.
Yes.
As everybody knows, the Murd is the word.
I'm a murd.
That's what I heard.
Oh, please, let's not start the rhyming. Oh, that's going to be hard to forget. Yeah, on episode 87, at the beginning of the show, for some reason, everybody just started rhyming and would not stop for like 10 minutes. It was very, very disturbing.
Murd is the word. Murd. Murd is the word. Murd. Murd. Murd is the word. Murd. Murd is the word. As everybody knows, the bird is the word.
That's what I heard.